Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Action Radio. This is Greg Penglis coming to you from the historic district of downtown Milton on the banks of the beautiful Blackwater River. And now let's get into Action Radio. You know, we call it Action Radio for a reason. The whole point here is to take action. And unfortunately, I kind of took this out of Josie a little bit ago, and I'll talk to her about this in the second hour. But people send me videos all the time. I mean, it's great. It's wonderful. I appreciate the support. But I already know the information. In fact, I've known the information for a year, 2 years, 3 years, you know, and yeah, there's some new little tidbits and new things coming out. And yeah, it's nice to have some of the extras and that kind of stuff. Yeah, that's okay. But however, the problem is that nobody's doing anything. People, and I call it raising complaining to an art form. And so I want to talk to Brianna about that. I want to talk to Josie about that. And I'm going to talk to everybody about that in the third hour, that there's a fascination with repeating stuff that we already know and or being the first to repeat something that's just a little bit different, just a little bit newer, but it's not actually solving the problem. And I see us as solving the problems. I mean, we write bills. We write legislation. I had Jonathan Mosley on the show yesterday, and we were talking about juries. And I said, well, juries are supreme to the judges. He's like, well, Jonathan's a criminal defense attorney. It's not like this is new to him, right? You know, but that thought was new to him because it's new to everybody in the judiciary. They don't talk like this. And so I say, yeah, of course, because the juries represent the people and the judge represents the government. So then I had the bright idea this morning to say, well, if we call the judge your honor, you know, why don't we call the jurors your justice? You know, or and the jury four person should be called your excellence. You know, let's give them a title too. Let's put the judge in an umpire's outfit with white and black striped shirts and a whistle and make him like a referee, which is what they are. And let's have the jurors have the black robes and have them sit above the judge. These are just some of the things that go through my mind. But the biggest problem is that we're sitting around talking about stuff and everybody's being the first to share videos with the latest information, but nothing gets changed. So let's change a few things. Let's get to Brianna with the government inquiry report. She started as a guest on Action Radio, courtesy of our Constitution reporter, Amber Kemper. Both Brianna and Amber are graduates of Patriot Academy, a place where young folks get to practice writing and advocating legislation, and being legislators in a mock session. Brianna immediately impressed all of us as someone we wanted on the show with her own report. With an insightful mind, asking and taking on complex questions, and a growing skill in sarcasm and satire, plus her study of government, history, the Constitution, and our founding, all of her skills and knowledge combine into something pretty incredible here on Action Radio. And now, the Government Inquiry Report with Brianna Cannon. Well, how's that for a start? Good morning, Brianna.
Good morning.
So what's on your mind? I know what's on my mind. In fact, everybody knows what's on my mind because I can't help sharing it. But yeah, I'm just a little perturbed that, and I've said this before, that you know, everybody's really happy about sharing stuff. It's okay, stop sharing. That's, you know, share bills. If every person that shared videos with me shared our bills, we'd be in a totally different position right now. We just would. Anyway, I also wrote an article on the FBI KGB. I don't know if you've had a chance to peruse that yet.
No, I have not.
Well, I mean, your homework's more important than my homework for you. That's okay. So, what are you thinking? What's going on? What are the issues that are on your mind? Where shall we inquire this morning?
So I'm going to kind of go off of what I did last week because
Okay. There
is more to it that I found. And also. In the future, like, unless there's like another topic that I feel might be better, I might be doing a couple more just in-depth kind of looking at these.
I actually appreciate those more. You know, quite honestly, I'll spend 2 months on a topic. If you think it's worth doing and if you have the information for it and you want to do like a series and then, you know, what you want to do is keep the links to all those shows in the series of the topic that you're talking about. Put that together as a unit. You know, and we can do that here on the show as well. But absolutely. Yeah, I love in-depth. You know, most shows, you know, you're told the boss, the radio boss tells you 2 minutes. That's all you get, 2 minutes. People are stupid. Don't explain to them too much. They can't handle it. And of course, I think just the opposite. I think people can handle it, and they appreciate the depth that we cover. And Joe Rogan's proved that, and some of the other folks have proved that. We've been doing it for years. You know, I mean, I started 6 years ago doing in-depth, you know, hour-long interviews to the contrary to everything I was being told by the radio experts. Oh, well, that's okay. Anyway, so yeah. Oh, by the way, Marco's listening in the Netherlands right now, so you're broadcasting worldwide. Feel free. Don't let that bother you. It's just us. So
yeah, actually, what you're saying about that, about them not thinking that people are intelligent enough, I actually, because I was writing an essay about this before, about bureaucracies, and when I was doing this, I found that in the Han Dynasty in China, this is kind of where I think was like the introduction to bureaucracy, because there was a different spots around the world, and I was basically, I was right where they came up. And in the Han Dynasty, they have like a really forceful legalism, and they got rid of Confucianism completely. They had really strict laws. They had a lot of control. That's kind of like what the main points of what they were doing were. And, okay, here it is. It was really interesting because it's about keeping them stupid. It was basically saying that they're not intelligent enough to make decisions or do things. Let's see if this is it.
No, I see parallels already.
Intellectual freedom had to be
What's going on today? Go ahead. No, keep going. This is interesting.
Yeah, it says severe punishments for misbehavior, rewards inspire obedience and dedication to the state. Intellectual freedom had to be restricted. Economy would be based on agriculture while commerce would be limited. And then right here, it quotes the book of Lord Shang. And it says it was written in the 3rd century, and it says, a weak people means a strong state, and a strong state means weak people. Therefore, a country which has the right way is concerned with weakening the people. If they are simple, they become strong. If they are licentious, they become weak. Being weak, they are law-abiding. Being licentious, they let their ambition go too far. Being weak, they are serviceable. But if they let their ambition go too far, they will become strong. If the people live in humiliation, they value rank. If they are weak, they value honor. If they are weak, they honor office. And if they are poor, they prize rewards. If people are governed by means of punishments, they enjoy service. So that they did. They set honorary ranks and privileges, where they wouldn't have to go into labor or pay, because basically all they had was agriculture, so that it would be a forced labor. And they would allow them not to pay certain taxes and stuff. And right here, the bottom line, it says, the purpose was to create a new loyal elite to replace the old feudal one. Which
See,
was
where have we heard
conflict.
This before?
And it's kind of going into what I'm going to be talking about today, because what they were wanting to do is because they had a bunch of, because they had one empire that was controlling all of the little, I don't know what you'd call it, states, I guess is the best way to put it.
No, it makes sense. And I mean, there were individual states, provinces, you know, like the warlords would handle their own territories and things like that, you know, back in ancient systems. When was the Han Dynasty? That was about, you said 3rd century AD or BC?
I know the book was produced in the 3rd century. Here. Because it wasn't, like, just 1 year or something, because it was me. 206 B.C. to 220 A.D. is what this says.
That's 400 years.
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah,
this is fascinating. I want to copy
you. It lasted a long time.
I want to copy this because this is absolutely relating to everything that's going on today. It goes back to the Prussian education system from the 1800s. It goes on to what's happening today. It's what we call the idiocracy. It's actually ruled by the stupid who want to convince, who keep everybody else stupid, but they're actually the biggest idiots themselves. I got Pianki in the line. I got Marco in the Netherlands. This is going to be a busy morning, but continue on. Let's. I want to develop this a little bit, then I'll bring in everybody else in the conversation.
There's one more part to this about the Han Dynasty before I switch over to the other information.
Uh-huh.
And it says, in order to foster obedience and break up the traditional loyalty to the family, which it is viewed as a threat to state supremacy. So they're saying family and loyalty to family is a threat to supremacy, just as they believe, you know, strength, knowledge, and ambition is also a threat to their control over people. It says, the regime divided the population into units consisting of 5 to 10 households. Each individual's crime was considered as the responsibility of the unit. This system incentivized people to report a crime to the authorities so as to avoid harsh punishment to all members of the unit.
Mm-hmm.
Measures such as these increased agriculture productivity, created an efficient tax system, brought revenues to the government, and instilled in people fear of our authority. Sorry,
I'm
Beth.
Just taking notes. What's that? No, I'm just taking notes here. Don't mind me. I got background noise out here, too. I got the windows open because it gets hot. Yeah, go ahead.
I'm going to send those to you, but...
Yeah. Oh, no, I want these. This is fascinating. And like I say, the parallels to Marxism are direct. You know, from Marxism to Nazism to communism to socialism to fascism to all the other isms out there, they're all doing exactly the same thing. I mean, the parallels are incredible. I never knew this. This is fascinating for me because I don't know my history.
So you're
going to
love this part.
Okay, yeah, I had a feeling. Pianki knows ancient history. That's why I'm sure he's called in so quickly. But I want to hear your whole presentation first, and then we'll sort of get into it. Yeah, tell me the rest. This is getting good.
So all of these policies that they implemented,
mm-hmm.
all of the control that they had over all of these areas, their entire system was reliant upon the bureaucracy that they implemented. Now, they didn't call it a bureaucracy at that point in time. It wasn't until, like, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years later until
mm-hmm.
bureaucracy was coined. But their system was basically a bureaucratic system with, you know, officers and administrators.
Mm-hmm.
So.
No, this is fascinating too, because I'll tell you, well, what's interesting is that one of the things I want to do is come up with a new model for government which doesn't include bureaucracies. And I don't know how to do it. It's one of the very few things I can't answer like immediately, you know, because most things can be figured out fairly quickly. This one's different because, you know, Rome had bureaucracies. Ancient Greece had bureaucracies. Egypt had bureaucracies. The Middle East, the Islamic Empire, when it was great, you know, when they had the Library at Alexandria, I'm sure had bureaucracies. Everybody has, even, you know, Native American Indians have bureaucracies. Everybody does. So the question is, and they never seem to work out well because the bureaucracies tend to take over for the representative government. And eventually you sort of, you know, work your way down, you know, evolve into the unrepresentative government. And that's what we have now. That's why Trump is such a threat to everybody. And we should bring that in the conversation too. But what you've said is exactly what the Marxists have said, that you need the state is preeminent, and you want, and like the Nazis had everybody reporting on each other, and the communists did too. And break up of the family, worship the state. The state is your God. The state is your family. The state is everything. And the people with the least moral character and humanity of all are the ones that always seem to rise or want to have the most power. You know, I was reading something that on Facebook this morning, and someone posted that, you know, power is and the desire for control is evidence of the weakest person, not the strongest. The strongest person is the one who doesn't want any control except over themselves. So this is all quite interesting. So are you relating this to what's going on today? And this would be like a long-term project. Maybe you and I can talk about this as we explore some of these things, is how do we get beyond bureaucracy? Can we create a government without bureaucracy and still get the laws enforced? That's a huge question.
Yeah, and I don't think that'll be answered in the information I have, but what I was just talking about is definitely correlating to, you know, the history of Marxist ideas, you know, in Nazi Germany. And everything that you were talking about definitely ties into that, and also this big globalization movement, because, you know, history repeats itself, but not mm-hmm. always in the exact same way in the exact same places, because other places use what has been taught in history, and they twist it and stuff. And stuff that I had previously learned for today, and this is only half of it, because I don't think I would be able to fit it all into this, but so the second half will be next week, but it is terrifying. But
no, that's okay. You're absolutely right. Yeah. You know, I think you're not exaggerating here. Yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah. On the bureaucracy, there is one part of it. Have you heard of Max Weber?
Yes, but I'm not. Is it pronounced Weber? Is it a communist guy from European guy, 1800s? Or are we talking about somebody mm-hmm. different?
No, he was a German, I think they called him a sociologist, or I think it's
okay.
Sociologist, German sociologist.
I think I know who you mean, but go ahead and tell me and fill in the details, yeah.
Yeah, he was a big influence and was describing basically the American bureaucratic system and how it should be. Mm-hmm. And one of the things he says is a rational way for complex businesses and governments to organize. And then he laid out these different steps of having an effective bureaucracy, because he believed if it's not effective, basically you shouldn't have it, because it's not productive and it's harmful, you know. And, you know, there's a specific reason that you have a bureaucracy, and there's a way to lay out your bureaucracy in order to be effective. And so his characteristics are a chain of command that is hierarchical, with the top bureaucrat having ultimate control, and authority flows from the top down. Number two is a clear division of labor, where every individual has a specialized job. A clearly written, well-established formal rules that all people in the organization follow. Clearly defined set of goals that all people in the organization strive toward, and merit-based hiring and promotion, where there's no granting of jobs to friends or family unless they are the best qualified. And the last one is performance that is judged by productivity on how much work an individual gets done.
Well, so it's interesting, because the good part of that is merit. You know, what we have today is what they call diversity, equity, and inclusion, or as I call it, division, extortion, and idiocracy, because they're rewarding people based on their skin color, their gender, you know, what sex their partner is, and stupid criteria. It makes no sense. But what's interesting is that this is very similar to a military model. And I was just thinking about how after World War II, all the soldiers that came back, you know, once you've lived through D-Day, there's not a whole lot to be afraid of. And so these guys, and mostly guys, would start corporations or you know, working corporations and rise to the top. And a lot of it was based on a military model. Everybody, you know, all it was mostly men. They all wore the white shirt and the black tie, and they all, you know, followed orders. And, you know, and it was a very top-down kind of controlled situation, which worked fine when the United States was the only industrial power in the world after World War II. Everybody else was bombed out. We had all the factories. Of course, our factories got old, but theirs got modernized. But it's interesting that the rest of the world caught up and kind of passed us by. And then we reversed the military model and went to like a feminist model and a Marxist model. Some parts were good, some parts were bad in terms of flex time and getting a little more creative at work and less of a military model. But the drive and ambition and the rewarding by merit, as opposed to rewarding by friends, family, and who you know and what you are, it's what seems to change everything. But do you see the corporate and the military parallels? Because it seems to me pretty straightforward that the political, you know, regiments with the discipline, and then it goes to the education system. And then as people grow up and start working, you know, they're used to an authoritarian model in school. So it's very easy to fit into an authoritarian model, especially if they're in the military, and then get into the corporate world. And they're all still that same authoritarian model. What do you think?
Yeah, I can see that correlation. Also, I'm going to backtrack just a little bit, because I should clarify, it wasn't the Han. I said I'm missing. It's actually the Chin,
okay.
Q-I-N.
Wait,
And that's where they supposedly coined the term China, is from the first dynasty, Qin dynasty.
Huh.
But, yeah.
Okay, so any little timeline. Yeah.
So the first one was the Qin dynasty, and it was in 221 BC to 206, and then this was, like, where they had the first emperor and stuff, and this was, like, the first unification of all these different warring states with the Qin dynasty.
Hmm.
And then it was the Sui, it's S-U-I, I don't know how to pronounce that.
That's okay, don't worry about it.
And then it's the Han, which is the one I was talking about earlier, the one that reigned for 400 years.
What was the last dynasty in China? Tang? And Xi Jinping? It's interesting that I heard there's like 12 Chinese names now because, you know, Mao killed so many millions of people and he made all the names the same to make them all equal. So it's like 12. So there was Deng Xiaoping, there was now Xi Jinping. There's a lot of Pings, you know. And it's actually a first name, which is interesting. The last name, the first name. I'm just wondering if the Chinese Communist Party are descendants of any particular dynasty. Just curious. Have you looked into that at all? I mean, you may not. I'm just speculating.
Yeah, no, I haven't looked at that.
Okay, that's fine.
Dynasty was the Qing. So it's like Q-I-N-G.
Mm-hmm.
And it was in 1911/12 AD.
So not that long ago. That's right before World War One.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so let's do a little speculation. Yeah. So 1911, 1912 was the Titanic, 1913 was the year we lost our freedom, 1914 was the beginning of World War One. This is a pretty tumultuous time. War ended in 1918. Roaring Twenties was like 1922 when Calvin Coolidge cut the budget in half and the national debt in half. Gee, what a good idea. And then we had the Roaring Twenties, and then, of course, we had the mass depression caused by the socialists. But where was China? So China, I'm not sure what happened in China between the national government of Chiang Kai-shek and the Marxist government of Mao Zedong, depending on your pronunciation. Because they started in, I guess, the late 30s, because Japan invaded China in 1937. So what do you know how we got from the Qing dynasty to Mao? What happened in the middle years? Or was that one of the only times in China where they actually had a republic?
Mao was the 50s, right?
No, Mao wasn't. No, he started actually World War II. Here's one of the real tragedies of American history. You want to study how bad the Marxists have ruined our country. The State Department had all kinds of the Defense Department had all kinds of weapons. We were supporting Chiang Kai-shek against Mao because, you know, we didn't believe in communism here in the United States. At least we didn't used to. But the State Department blocked the weapons on the docks so that Chiang Kai-shek never got the weapons. Mao confiscated all the Japanese weapons from World War II. When we beat the Japanese, Mao took them, used them against Chiang Kai-shek, who had to retreat to, you know, Formosa, which is now Taiwan. So the only free Chinese, the real China, we should recognize Taiwan as the real China and recognize mainland China as basically the CCP, Chinese Communist Party, because that's what it is. I'm just curious because you look at Russia went from czars to communism. You know, you look at the warring states. Germany went from warlords, you know, warring states to Bismarck to Kaiser to Hitler. You know, so I'm wondering. I'm thinking of nations that have an authoritarian model. Do they continue it? And at what point do the people say no? Now, the only people where freedom really started is England with Magna Carta, rebelling against the monarch. So that's where our tradition of freedom really comes from. But it's not a common thing worldwide. So the parallels between what you just told me about destroying the family. Go ahead. This is fascinating.
I mean, these kind of situations of, you know, people fighting against, you know, the oppressive rulers, people wanting freedom, you know, slavery, you know, people trying to break up family units. You know, all the things that you see, I mean, it can even be seen in the Bible. You know, I mean, all of these tactics have been seen throughout history. You know, it's not like there was one starting point for something. Now, there's definitely, like, what you're saying in perhaps, like, the American freedom definitely spurred from, you know, wanting to break away from, you know, the King George, you know, the oppression of England.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, that wasn't the first sign, or that wasn't the first point in history where, you know, people were breaking away from history. I think that's the same, like, you know, with these dynasties, that wasn't the first. You know, what we see in Germany with Hitler, that wasn't the first. Mm-hmm. Now, that might have been the first time somebody murdered 6 million Jews at once, but
well, you go back to Genghis Khan. You know, I mean, mass murder has been a theme throughout history. I want to bring Priyanka in a second. He's good on ancient history. I want to pursue this a little bit. But, you know, the Greeks had democracy, but democracy leads to tyranny. So, in fact, they even recognized that they owned their own flaw in the system. The Romans had a republic. So I should correct myself that there were ancient societies with freedom, but they lost it. And they all lost it the same way. Bureaucracy.
Corruption.
Rule by the unelected. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, you were saying the bureaucracy. I was saying corruption.
Corruption, exactly.
Thing.
Yeah. Well, now, can you have bureaucracy without corruption? Because you've got people that aren't elected that create more and more power for themselves, and there's no check on that power. I mean, there's, you know, they're out there. You know, in fact, I'll talk about Trump's. Well, go ahead, Priyanka. I'm kind of curious what he has to say. Did you have further one?
Yeah,
further comment on.
I think you can create, you know, a system of bureaucracy where there's not corruption. I just think it takes, you know, time, and I think it takes studies to really understand, because it's just like whenever they created our Constitution, you know, it wasn't something, it was the first time that this has been done, right? This isn't seen anywhere else. They had to create something new, a system used off of other systems that they could make work. And so that's what you'd have to do with a bureaucratic system. You'd have to use that system that's already been used and try and frame it to keep the freedom of the individuals.
Makes sense.
I think it'd be the same kind of process.
Yeah, something just popped into my head. The Edict of Nantes, and I think it's a French document, and I'm not sure what that is, but I think there have been different times in history. Okay, here we go. So this is something, let me see if I can find this one here. I don't know if I'm on the right track here. This just kind of popped into my brain. It's French. So the French have an interesting history too, because you've got the French Revolution, which was completely different than the American War for Independence. We were trying to throw off a colonial power. They were trying to bring about a whole new philosophy of fraternity, equality, and fraternity, égalité, liberté, and liberty. And they kind of shortchanged the liberty. Okay, so this was, Edict of Nantes was 1598, granted a large measure of religious liberty to Protestant subjects, Huguenots. Edict was accompanied by, okay, so religion was a whole big thing. Okay, I'm going to put that aside for now. That might be interesting. Let's get to Priyanka. I want to find out more about ancient societies. Priyanka, what can you share light on this? Bureaucracy, societies falling apart. What do can you tell, like, Carthaginians, Abyssinians, Babylonians? Let's go way back. Let's talk about, did the authoritarian societies have that same principle of destroying the family, worship the state, making people stupid, having it's like the government education system. That's its whole purpose, is to take really bright kids at 4 or 5 and turn them into idiots by the time they graduate high school. Priyanka?
Well, no matter whether, good morning. First of all, good morning to your guests.
But, oh, let's be honest. She's a regular. She's not a guest. She's a reporter. She's a regular. She's on every Tuesday. Let's give her a proper title.
Good morning. Good morning to your reporter. Well, it's always, societies always have so far always came to an end. They have a lifespan, no matter whether it's what you call just or whether you call corrupt. Corruption always exists. If you have corruption here in the United States, then you go to other third world countries or banana republics, as they like to call them, you have corruption. I would ask her to study Oliver Cromwell and King Charles the First,
mm-hmm.
and his son who came later on.
Let's talk about that.
That's
a fascination with me, actually, because as a kid in Australia, one of our field trips was to watch Cromwell with Richard Harris. It was a required viewing. It's part of our education because it was such a historic film. Brianna, I don't know if you've ever seen that, but do you know about Cromwell and Charles I and the divine right of kings? Kings can do no wrong because they're kind of like the Pope. They're God's representative on earth. Brianna?
I've heard the name Oliver Cromwell, but I have no idea who he is.
Okay. Well, if you get a chance, watch the Richard Harris film. It's a little, you know, grossitized. It's a little graphic, you know, but because, you know, the king, you know, kind of tortured people. But but the whole premise is that the people, you know, through the parliament will govern. You know, it was like 1600s. So this would have been right after the Edict of Nantes. Magna Carta, I think, was 1200 something. And so the English have been rebelling against you know, authoritarian governments, you know, probably as long as they've had a monarchy, but it really started, you know, of course, then was Braveheart. When was Braveheart? Who knows when the Scottish rebelled against Edward I? Pianki, do you know?
No, not right off then, but you know, the principle of Oliver Cromwell was carried on with, he was a Puritan.
Right.
And that same principle was carried by the settlers who came here. The settlers that came here believed that, this land was destined to them by the Bible, you know. So,
well, the Puritans believe that, if I understand it correctly, and Brianna, you know, feel free to jump in here too, that that no man is above God. God is God and man is man, and no man can be God or speak for God, you know, directly and represent God and assume the powers of God. And the problem with King Charles I was that he said that there is a divine right of kings. If the king does it, it's legal, you know, because the king is God for all intents and purposes over, you know, the king is the sovereign. Everybody else is a subject. They still call them British subjects. You know, British are not citizens. You know, you could be, I guess now you can be called a citizen of Great Britain, but quite honestly, they're still subjects. They don't have the same rights. They don't have a constitution like we do. Let's check with Marco in the Netherlands, you know, because the Netherlands still has a monarchy. I mean, the last queen I know is Queen Wilhelmina, and I don't know who the current king or queen of the Netherlands is, but I think they still have one. You know, so so Marco, are you a subject or are you a citizen? Brianna, what do you know about this?
Only a little bit, like a general idea. I don't know much of this in depth.
Well, that's all right. Well, this is why it's so much fun to speculate. Well, so when you found all this stuff about bureaucracy, tell me, we should refresh where we were last week and then this week and where we might go with this next week. So what are you leading to? Do you have conclusions? Do you have thoughts? Do you have things we should be exploring? Ideas, topics? And you never have to have a right answer or an answer for everything right away. This isn't school. This is where we ask the questions that nobody else is asking. So in asking the question, a lot of times it'll set us on a journey to try and discover an answer. That to me is far more important than you know, having a short question and a short answer. So where were we last week and how did this come about to bring up the Chinese dynasties and this authoritarian model? It's really interesting.
Yeah. So last week we were kind of talking about, you know, this push towards globalism. And I'm actually going to be talking more about that a little bit more in depth.
Okay.
But the Chinese dynasty, you know, I think it was kind of like one of those things where it just comes into place because I had just been studying this. And so it's kind of like that knowledge was still kind of fresh in my mind, and I could see the correlation whenever I was doing it. And so whenever you – I don't even remember what you brought up, but like – couple minutes ago, before we got into the big discussion, you know, you brought up something and it just sparked, and I was like, "Oh wait, you know, this
did you write
is here."
Yeah, because we don't have an instant replay, so I've already forgotten what I said. So I never, you know, so tell me about it. What did I say?
I don't know.
Oh, well, we'll have to catch on the podcast later. But yeah, but the globalism.
Yeah.
So is it, because it used to be that a nation, that people wanted to control an entire nation. So the Qing dynasty, the dynasties wanted to control China. Genghis Khan wanted to control Mongolia and most of the world. Alexander the Great wanted to control Macedonia and the world. But the globalists, they're starting with the world. You know, they're not even bothering with controlling individual nations. Or, in fact, they're doing it backwards. They're taking globalists through the Young Leaders Program, which I call Communist Boot Camp, and then they're sending them back out again. And that would be Jacinda Ardern, who completely destroyed New Zealand with tyranny over COVID, Justin Trudeau. Who are the other Marxists that are out there that have been through the – we have some of our folks here, some of our journalists and some of our leaders. The governor of Georgia was in the Young Leaders Program, Communist Boot Camp. So the globalists seem to be doing it differently now. Is it because of the technology? They can reach more people, do more things. You know, we've got jet travel. We've got instant communication. That they're starting with, in other words, the world's trying to control the nations rather than a nation trying to control the world. Do you see how that's flipped around?
Yes. Yeah, and that's their goal. That's also their problem of, you know, that conflict. But they have found a way to solve that problem, supposedly. But still, in the minds of most, you know, that, you know, they won't actually be able to accomplish this globalist society because of all of the different cultures and everything.
See, that's the interesting part.
The thing is, just because...
Yeah, go ahead.
But I still think that just because something has that many difficulties and that many boundaries that you have to cross and that many risks to take, and the amount of difficulty it would be to do that to the world, I think once you have enough power and fear and control, and once you have your circumstances correct, I think you could actually be able to implement globalism. And that's what they've been trying for years, is trying to implement this. You know, they have been trying to implement this for 80 years. So...
Yeah,
I mean,
it's like, but it's the same thing.
Just a theory anymore.
We've seen this all before. That's the crazy part, you know. And it goes back. World War One, they tried it. You know, Wilson with the League of Nations. That was a world government. You know, the United Nations after World War II. That's a world government. You know, and it goes back all through.
Oh, you're gonna love what I'm talking about today.
Well, then go for it. Tell me more. What's next on our agenda?
So, most of the information that I got here was from Alex Newman. You may
Who's
have
that?
Heard of him before.
I have not. Tell me.
He's the founder of some kind of organization of, like, educating Christians. I know he's a journalist. He might have some other business. But basically, he went into, like, a deep dive of globalization.
Huh.
So a lot of what I'm going to be talking about is from him, and then I actually went into the terrifying website. You know, that's something that go into the websites of the United Nations and the World Economic Forum, and it is just like all the headlines and all the articles and everything that they have just on it. I mean, literally the headline, like front page on all the pages that you go to for the United Nations. Where is it? I wrote this down. It says, peace, dignity, and equality for a healthy planet. That's their headline on everything. I was like,
yeah, so...
they're not quiet about it. They're literally shouting it from the rooftops. But, they have a bunch of articles. A lot of the ones on the United Nations that I saw was history of slavery, and they wanted to dismantle and fight it and things like that. What I saw a lot of the articles being, and then there was a lot of technology things. One of the other things on the United Nations was their sustainable development goals and climate action, and they said there are 17 goals. Well, this exact thing is on Agenda 2030 with the World Economic Forum.
How about
so
that?
They're working together here. And it's very obvious, you know, you can find that very quickly. But they also, if you go onto the page and you click About Us and you go over to the UN system, so United Nations, About Us, UN system, you'll find a page with a ton of different, I guess you'd say, organizations or your three-letter groups. Some of them here I'll put up. UNDP, UN Habitat, UNICEF, UNEP, and they just got maybe 100 or something, maybe not 100, but, you know, 50 or something. They've got a lot of these on here. And they're a bunch of just different organizations, and they're all around the world, like Switzerland, Germany, Austria, Denmark, New York, Italy, Jordan, Washington, D.C. Oh, that's the World Bank. France, United Kingdom.
Well,
you know, these things are all around the world.
Is the U.N. funding the World Economic Forum? Do they have a direct pipeline? So in other words, countries that are contributing to the U.N., which is mostly us, is that money, is a portion of that going direct to the World Economic Forum? Have you seen a connection? Because they have the same thing. I was just curious if you found anything.
Yeah.
Or have you looked at that?
I'm going to have to look into that. I'm writing that down. But
okay.
I don't actually know that exactly, but I wouldn't be surprised if one wasn't funding the other at least.
Mm-hmm.
But because it seems with all of their motivations here that they are actually working together here. But,
well, and they're all working for the same thing. A lot of this starts with, and Pianki's made some points. If you can check the live chat at some point here, he's got a lot of points on Oliver Cromwell, which is a great time in England. But Cromwell rejected being king, just as Washington rejected being king here. That people... there's something this Henry Kissinger said, no, I'll do my best. Henry Kissinger was Secretary of State under Richard Nixon. And he said, power is the ultimate aphrodisiac. So in other words, power, people love power. They love power. They love to be around people who are powerful. And that's power attracts its own people who want power generally. And this is why dictators are always so suspicious and paranoid and kill all their opposition, because everybody wants the power that they have. You know, if you don't have a peaceful transfer of power like we have, except for the last election, then things get pretty crazy out there. Have you ever read the UN Declaration of Human Rights? And Pianki brought this up too in a comment. Well, not this, but this idea, because this is where I think the real problems start. Have you taken a look at it?
I haven't read it completely, but I remember we read part of it on the show one day, and then I went back and I read a little bit more of it, but I haven't read all of it.
Okay. Well, you don't have to, but what's good, because I can't read it and remember it all. I have, my memory, for details, I get bored real fast. And so, but there's a big difference between human rights and individual rights, and we made that very clear in our Australian Bill of Individual Rights. I don't know if you've checked out that lately, but there's some really interesting stuff that would apply to today, not just in Australia, but everywhere, especially in the United States. Go ahead.
Yeah, we had a discussion over it about, the human rights not being realistic.
Well, it's not that they're not realistic, it's that they're group rights. I mean, we're realistic is one part of it too. But what they're doing, let's relate this to what you said earlier with sustainability and climate change. So, this is why I brought it up, because there's because when they say human rights, the intention they're trying to give, they're trying to equate human rights with individual rights. But in actual fact, they're not. This is the big lie. There's always a big lie somewhere when it comes to leftists. And the big lie says that, well, human rights, these are universal. These are rights that apply to everybody. Dignity. Well, how do you give people dignity? Well, you take money from people that earned it and you give it to those that didn't. then they have the dignity, a living wage, for example. Or, and people say, well, and I try to explain this to people that the individual rights are completely different than human rights. Because if human rights means that everybody who's human, has the same rights. So if you have, truth, justice, the American way, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, that means Madagascar does too. So why can't they have your house? That's a human right. So if your right to accumulate property is not an American right under the Constitution for American citizens and lawful immigrants, permanent residents, it's for everybody, then Madagascar and, pick a country, Chad, Thailand, but any poor person from any country, they're human. Why can't, it's like the open borders folks. They'll say, well, they just want a better life. I said, well, great. They can have a better life, just not here. go make a better life for yourself. And then if you want to come here, that's different. But the thing is, you don't have human rights trying to equalize the world is never going to work, because most countries, like you were talking about, China, we've talked about, Germany and Mongolia and all these different societies, Rome, Greece, Egypt. They may have started off with the best of intentions, but as Pianki said, it eventually dies out, and you can't give away. We don't have enough to give away to you know, equalize everybody. And yet that's what they talk about. But I don't think it's made clear enough the difference between human rights, where everybody gets the same stuff, okay, and individual rights, where you have the right to pursue your maximum potential. Make sense?
Yeah. And okay. And that kind of reminds me, like, what you're talking about here kind of reminds me of, like, the process of the free market economy, you
okay.
know, versus the communist one. And it's what a lot of people are kind of, like, fighting for or against is because they don't understand that part of it. You know, they believe that the communism part will, you know, make everything more equal. Everybody will get money even if they don't deserve it and stuff, but they don't really
uh-huh.
care about that part. But what they don't see is that because main reason that they go to that is, A, they don't fully understand it, but it's because
mm-hmm.
they think that this capitalist society is horrible. Because if they first didn't think that the capitalist society is horrible, they wouldn't run to communism. And the reason that they think that is because they don't understand it. And that's something I've learned because I've been listening to a lot of people like on like why they believe in communism, why they believe, you know, the free market or what they call capitalism is
mm-hmm.
evil. And so the main thing is, you know, in the free market, nobody gets poor because what you do is workers get paid to make something.
Mm-hmm.
Then
You can have poor people in a free market. You can definitely have poor people in a free market. But what you don't do is restrict the people from gaining property and wealth, you know, if they're entrepreneurial, if they mind taking a risk. See, the thing is, there's a trade-off.
Yes.
This is interesting.
Well,
go ahead.
Yeah, I don't mean to say that. I mean, like,
okay.
in a free market economy, it's not like somebody gets everything taken away from them by doing work. It's not like they go to work and they don't get paid for anything and they go home and they starve, you know, because they don't have any money. You know, it's not like that. I mean, people work and they get paid and then they sell
mm-hmm.
a product and they get paid. The people that bought that product have a job somewhere else where they get paid from somebody else who made something
mm-hmm.
who gets paid. So, you know, everything within the free market system is somebody does work in order to gain an income in order to buy other things from other people to give them an income for making a different product.
Yeah.
Whether
have you heard the expression?
Food or clothes, you know.
Yeah, have you heard the expression zero-sum game or zero-sum?
I've heard of it. I can't remember what it is, but I've heard of, like, the zero-carbon thing.
That's different. A zero-sum game is where the only way that somebody can gain something is somebody else has to lose something. And it's basically the socialist economic philosophy. So in other words, if Bill Gates, you know, has X billions of dollars, that means he stole it from other people who deserve it. And this is the whole basis of equity. It's the basis of enforced, you know, everything from climate change, sustainability. It all comes from this idea that life is a zero-sum game, that the amount of wealth in this country is fixed. And the only way you can get more of it is to take it from other people. It's a bunch of nonsense because the wealth in this country is not fixed. You know, the gross domestic product, you know, the ability of more people, you know, using more raw materials to create more finished goods, to provide more services. That's what wealth is. Wealth is people plus labor plus raw materials plus creating finished goods and services. That's how society gains wealth. And so the larger the amount of wealth you have, the larger the amount of wealth that's available for everybody. Now, is it going to be, quote, distributed equally? No. But that's okay because that's a free market. You know, some people work harder than others, so they should get more stuff. Some people are smarter than others, so they can invent more things. You know, and it's just, it doesn't work this way. But if you try and equalize everybody, the only way to equalize everybody is to take the lowest common denominator. It's like creating an education system. Well, everybody has to succeed in education. Well, that means you lower it down to the dumbest person in the school. That's the only way to equalize it, right? Well, what does that do for everybody else? So the school system's only serving one person. The least intelligent one. That's probably not their fault. You know, I'm sure I'm not trying to pick on people, but the point is that's what happens. That's the zero-sum game. And it's not true. You know, if you want more wealth, you make a bigger – it's like, you know, a pie. When we talk about inflation, if you have 8 slices in your pie and then you cut those slices into 16, you go, look, you got more slices. Well, isn't that great? No, because each slice is half what it was before. The amount of nutrition is still the same. You've just made it into two pieces. So this all kind of –
92 pieces of pie just to make up for the worth of one piece of pie.
Yeah, that's why you need a dollar to what used to cost 50 cents. Because your dollar is only worth 50 cents. I don't know if you I posted this on Facebook last night. I went through did a little bit of research on the stock market. And what would the Dow Jones Industrial Average be corrected for inflation? And so I went back to 1900 because that's a convenient figure people figured out. And apparently the dollar, today's dollar is worth 2.78 cents. Well, I just call it 3 cents. So basically today's dollar is worth 3 cents of what it was worth in 1913 or 1900. You know, because there wasn't much inflation between them. Inflation started with the Fed in 1913, which means that the Dow Jones average of $32,483 or whatever it is, correct inflation is $900. That's not a lot, you know, considering the Dow Jones started in 1896 at $41. So it's gone from 41 to 900. Now, that's an increase, you know, of several times over. But it's like, you know, but over the course of over 100 years, that's nothing. So most of the increase in the Dow Jones has come from inflation, have come from taking the dollar, devaluing it, and putting more in the economy. So we haven't actually gained as much as we think we have. It's interesting. Sustainable. Tell me about sustainable. How would you define sustainable? Because this is a key concept of the globalists.
I think we've kind of covered it back in the Agenda 2030 because it's part of the 17 steps because that's what smokescreen kind of word is mm-hmm. sustainable development goals. But really what that is, you know, basically what you're saying, a globalist communist society where they mm-hmm. can spread things however they want because they have control over the people and the food supply and the water supply and everything else and mm-hmm. the idea of keeping it sustainable. And then with that, one of the biggest things that I see that I've learned like with this push is mm-hmm. climate change and climate action. And that seems to be the biggest forefront that they're using to push this. And, I mean, supposedly they are able to artificial clouds and the weather already. They're working on being able to control the weather. Mm-hmm. Now, I haven't gone in depth to that, so I don't know if they really are doing that. I know they're trying, but I don't know if they have succeeded or anything yet because I haven't really looked into the weather thing. But I know that they are really big on pushing this climate change. Mm-hmm. And nothing that they're going to do is actually... But
why climate change? What, of all the issues to pick out there to control people, why climate change?
Well, this actually goes to my point. It's because what they're doing is they're starting in education of children. That's mm-hmm. who they're kind of getting to be on board with them is the children. And so climate change has been a huge thing all around the world.
Heard about it. There was sustainability when I was in school. I remember talking about environmental sustainability. Sustainability to me is like, you know, you plant a tree for every tree you cut down. That way you maintain the stock of trees. That only makes sense. That's logical. That's not what they're talking about. They're talking about you can't feed the planet unless we all eat bugs or produce meat in the lab. And it just came out that Tom Renz was testifying before Missouri. He's a lawyer, one of the hero lawyers out there. He said, look, if they're making, you know, lab meat, they're putting GMO, they're putting vaccines in the lab meat. So not only are they genetically modifying them, GMOs, but they're also genetically infusing messenger RNA to lab meat. Another good reason not to eat lab meat. Don't eat farm, you know, don't eat farm fish, don't eat lab meat, you know, get real stuff. The closer to nature, the better. But that's what they're doing now. And so, because it's sustainable. Well, what is sustainable? Sustainable is not planting a tree for every tree cut down. That's not what it means anymore. It's a whole different thing.
Yeah.
But what is it about climate change?
I mean, it's
go ahead.
It's a flashy topic to a lot of people, and mm-hmm. majority of people, especially in America, through the education system, people believe that it's this truly horrible event that's happening, and they have to do something to stop it. And whenever mm-hmm. you instill this in somebody's education and their minds and stuff, which is their goal, I mean, they say it outright that it's through education.
Right.
But, you know, they want to educate here. I'm going to actually find that part right here. They want to use education to build the mentality to not go to war by having, and in order to build that mentality, basically what they're going to do is have no nations in order to not be able to go to war with each other. But that's in a different part
of
it.
That's John Lennon. That's the song Imagine. Imagine there's no countries. It's easy if you try. You know, if you ever read the lyrics to John Lennon's song Imagine, I mean, the song's beautiful, but the words are terrible.
the words are really
disgusting. Yeah. So, but if you just read it,
but,
you give people – go ahead.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Oh,
well,
yeah,
no,
so they basically use this education to make the children think this way as they grow older and stuff, and so that they feel like they have to. And whenever they have this big thing saying sustainable development and climate action, you know, what they do is they have a lot of people just immediately going to jump on board with what they're doing. And actually the first – I found this, and I thought it was really interesting. The Paris Agreement
climate
was in 2015.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
And this was the first step of their push of, like, this climate action in their Agenda 2030. I was like, what? Because I never knew that. And didn't Trump get us out of that?
Yes,
and then
did.
Biden put us back in that?
Of course he did.
Yeah.
But Biden reversed everything that Trump did right. This is why everything's so screwed up now. So it would be an interesting topic next week. Let's call it the inverse theory, that everything – that the left hates Trump so much that they did they took everything that he did right, reversed it, totally screwed up the nation, and then still blame Trump for being a horrible person when they, in fact, have taken away everything that he did that was right. It's really quite fascinating. And they think they're doing the right thing.
Yeah.
Oh, I made a video, by the way, and I actually posted it this morning. I said, "Oh yeah, you'll find it in your messages." I actually posted on Facebook too. I'm getting braver about this. I said, "Look, there's no response to Trump's speech on Saturday night." So I made one for the Democrats. You know, I call it the Biden enhanced speech. Because if you listen to it, I made it using, and I've talked about doing this before, but I didn't exactly know how. So I had a YouTube of the Soviet national anthem playing in the background, and I had Biden's speech, you know, where he had the red background with the Marines and the flag and the whole kind of stuff. He's yelling and screaming and looks like a communist dictator. So I played them both at the same time and recorded it. You'll find it. So check my Facebook page, it's public, or check, you know, you'll find it. I've already said it to you, but it's out there. So I'm thinking, you know what, this is kind of cool. Let me ask you a question about the whole idea of climate change, of why climate change, because I have a theory that I was thinking of as we were talking. You can't prove or disprove climate change. You can talk about it in terms of fear. You can say, oh, the polar ice caps are melting, but who actually checks the polar ice caps to see if they're melting? Pianki made the point earlier that the Arctic ice caps are melting and the Antarctic ice caps are actually increasing because the Earth has wobbled a bit, which it does. You know, the polar bears are all dying out. Well, have you counted them? Apparently they're doing just fine. You know, go ahead.
There was something, I may have said it last week, I'm not sure, but they did different studies about the carbon footprint. Trying to do is see if it's accurate what they're saying about eliminating carbon emissions. And first off, if you had no carbon in the atmosphere, we would all be dead. Okay, so the zero carbon policy, we just got to throw out the window because I don't even understand how anybody got on board with that. But
well, let's find out. Let's think about it.
Yeah, but they did it during recessions and stuff where the productivity of carbon was extremely low. You know, so that basically us humans emitted way less carbon emissions. And what they found is that the level of the carbon footprint steadily increased just as it had before, no change.
So what was it?
They found that humans had no effect over the carbon in the air. And I was like, because, you know, through the entire school system and my entire life, I had been told that, you know, humans were to blame for all of this extra carbon in the air, and we had to take steps in order to do it, or in order to, you know, stop it and take it out and stuff. And, of course, I never got on board with it, but I never actually realized that we had no effect over it. Like, if we just stopped, you know, it wouldn't work. It still just increased.
So where did you find that again? I think I was either distracted or I missed that part. Is it a study that you found or just a realization? Or how did you come about with this? Where did it come from?
That one I found last week. It may have been from an article, or it may have been from, hold on, give me just a second.
Okay. We'll vamp. Do 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 do. It's live radio. Do 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 do. Let's talk about Pianchi might come in.
Sorry.
On live chat. No, no, it's okay. I don't take things seriously. You know me. So Pianchi says fear is used to get the people to believe in a particular fashion to further someone's cause. He's absolutely right. Oh, where'd Brianna go? Brianna, call back. she hit her phone. Brianna. This is kind of funny. You know, I guess, did she have to leave her? I mean, it's at the top of the hour. Did she have to leave, like, immediately? I felt like we're in mid-sentence here. She should call back. Let's get to Pianchi live. Pianchi, what do you think so far? Oh, no, she's back. I know it's the top of the hour, but usually you say goodbye before you go.
I don't know what happened.
No, that's okay.
I didn't even
realize
the time.
Yeah, no, it's the FBI KGB.
Kicked me off.
I didn't touch anything. I was going to read. I read Pianchi's comment about fear. Get the people to behave in a particular fashion. Well, I think is worth exploring. Climate change. You can't see it. You can't prove it. You can't disprove it. It's a completely imaginary concept. And as you said before, we are, and after I've talked about this with you, I've talked about it with pretty much everybody, we are a carbon-based life form. If you're against carbon dioxide, it must mean you hate people. I mean, I think it'd be a great argument against the climate changers, you know, the climate idiots. And they call us climate deniers. Okay, well, all right. Actually, I'm a climate realist. Go ahead, Pianchi. And then I got Jesse's on the line.
There has been times in history during events like the Transcontinental Railroad when people commented on the winter as being the worst that they have ever seen, where there was no cars on the road at that time, even before that. Then also in World War II, did they not say that the winter that was the worst in ages?
World War II is one of the hottest periods. It's interesting that all the communists, socialists, Marxists, fascists, they all rose to power during the hottest time in the 1900s, which is the 1930s. Well, temperature-wise, we're the hottest summers, the hottest record temperatures were in the 30s. So in the worst economy, when people went the craziest, it was actually the hottest. It's kind of interesting. But the Thames, spelled T-H-A-M-E-S, looks like Thames, but the Thames River in England froze over in the 1800s. Well, there weren't any cars then. They're just horses and poop, you know, and it's about methane. But the Thames froze over. People were skating. There are pictures in the 1800s. Everybody was skating on the Thames. It was, you know, fabulous. But just the idea of the climate, of the idea, this is what I'm thinking. If you can't prove it, you can't disprove it, you can't see carbon dioxide. You know, if you say floods are coming and the floods don't come, people go, oh, there's no flood. What are you talking about? But with climate change, you can't see it. It's all in your mind. It's an imaginary fear, which you either have or you don't have. But it seems to me the ultimate manipulation is to take a fear that you can't prove or disprove because it's purely imaginary and use that against people. And those who are predisposed to fear the imaginary because they don't have God, they don't have a solid belief, they don't understand science, they don't question, they've been raised to be idiots and not, you know, under an authoritarian model. It's pretty easy to manipulate people with the fear of something that they will never see, except in their minds. Brianna?
Hey, Greg.
Yeah.
So I'm going to have to go here in a minute or two, but
I
want to
quickly
cover these.
All right, go ahead. Oh, go ahead. Cover what you need to cover, then I'll get to
it. So I'm just going to, quickly go over this, and then I'm going to go. But if, like, you want to talk more about it or have questions, I mean, you can, like, write them down, and I'll hop on next week, and we can discuss
that
this a little
good.
Bit more.
We just have one discussion that just keeps going. We just break it up with a week.
Yeah, so the biggest push that they have is world peace because they want, like, this kind of, like, no conflict or no wars and stuff, and that's what they kind of instill in the education system is for kids to go towards this, you know, having no war, no conflict, no war, because war is bad. Go to peace. And so what they do is because they don't want any nations. They want everybody under this one globalist control. And this is one of the biggest arguments. Two things, but they're both tied. It's the first I'm going to tell you what it is. It's called UNESCO. You've probably
heard of it. Oh, yes.
Not
I've
sure.
Heard of them. Mm-hmm. Yep.
The United Nations Educational, Scientific, and Cultural Organization. And basically, there are a bunch of different departments under one head, UNESCO. Mm-hmm. And yep. In 1940s, it was headed by Julian Huxley. And supposedly, he was also the head of the Humanist Association. And basically, it's what they believed, this new kind of religion. And this is something else that Alex Newman was talking about, where he was saying, you know, it's not actually new. And that he was basically had found all this information. So if you want to, like, go in and, like, verify, like, where this is found and stuff.
No, I believe you. I already made notes for next week. But, yeah, this makes sense. Let's get to – Josie, do you have a compliment for – oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
And it basically – the religion is that the universe is not – the universe is not created, that it's just existing is what they believe. And it actually – what he was saying is what he found is in Genesis chapter 3. So I'm – found this with him, but I'm going to go over here to Genesis chapter 3 and kind of read the part that he's talking about. It says, now the serpent has more subtil than any beast of the field which the Lord God has made. And he has said unto the woman, ye hath God said, ye shall not eat of the fruit of the tree in the garden. And the woman said unto the serpent, we may eat of the fruit of the trees of the garden, but of the fruit of the tree which is in the midst of the garden, God has said, ye shall not eat of it, neither ye shall touch it, lest ye die. And the serpent said unto the woman, ye shall not surely die, for God doth know that in the day ye eat thereof, and then your eyes shall be opened, and ye shall be as gods, knowing good and evil. And that's the part he was talking about. When the serpent is telling her, which is basically Satan, is telling her that you won't die, and if you eat this, your eyes will be opened, you shall be as gods, knowing both good and evil. And that's kind of where they stand. They believe that basically Satan is good, or Lucifer is good, and liberate them from God, who kept them prisoner in the garden without knowledge, is, I guess, what their stance on it.
No, that's fascinating. But it makes sense, because they figure that they're their own gods and anything they do is okay, and their own personal pleasure and wild decadence and eccentricities, you know, from drag queens in school to everything else is fine, because it's just knowledge. They're just exercising knowledge in their free
but
will.
But it gets worse.
Uh-oh. Well, we got to get you to sum up a little bit, because I got Josie here, and I want to make sure we get to her. And you have to leave anyway, it sounds like. But, yeah, go ahead, tell me the worst. Make my day. Go ahead, tell me the worst part. Thanks, Brianna.
Yeah, this is only, like, one more minute. There's not much left to this. But
okay.
Basically what it goes to is they – using this kind of placement is they as humans, get to determine what good and evil is for themselves.
Right.
And that's exactly what we're seeing now, is people determining good and evil for themselves and not taking this accountability or this objectivity. And
which means, you know,
basically,
so they can reverse it. If they can determine it for themselves, they can say what's good is evil and what's evil is good, because they're the ones making the decision.
Yes, and that's what they've done. And basically, I think I may have talked about this before, I'm not sure, last week, but the United Nations has created this new Luciferian government. I think I was talking about this last week where I didn't know much about it.
Mm-hmm.
But basically, Alice Bailey is one of these, like, leaders of this, like, new religion that they had. I think she's dead, though. But she would claim that she's in communication with these, like, Luciferian spirits, and that she was the channel for these entities to help humans transcend these traditional, like, Christian and biblical ways and stuff, because they believed it was, like, wrong and outdated. And that's kind of what they're still pushing. And this Luciferian religion, I think, is what they will be establishing as the world religion. And I think they've already started on that worldwide religion that they'll be trying to implement in this globalized society that they're trying to create.
That'd be a great
and one
place
thing
to start
going
next
back
week.
Over this.
That'd be huge. That'd be a great topic for. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, there's two more things real quick, and the first one is it's actually a quote from Alex Newman, and it says, those who believe there is no God, therefore no God-given rights, are a threat to liberty. I think that basically sums up what they're wanting, because they don't want liberty, they want control. And so this last part is Julian Huxley once again, the one who headed UNESCO. He was also the leader of the Humanist Association, which I was telling you about, and the Eugenic Society, which is basically following along with that religion of evolution. And they believe that some races and genes are better than others, and so they can scientifically breed humans, which I may have also talked about last week. I'm not sure. But
that's
where
okay.
you can, merge them with technology to create the new elite species of human that they're wanting.
Now, this all ties in. In fact, the whole idea
of
God, that's amazing. But the whole idea of not having God-given rights is that they tell you what your rights are. And, and everything changes when the people who are in charge determine what the rights are. Josie, let's get you in on this here before we go. Do you have a comment for her?
Yeah. I wanted to make a comment. And the Luciferian Illuminatis and all these people, it's been going on for a long time in the world, and especially in the United States. And I believe that's why they are poisoning humans, which is God's creation, with poison from snake and cobra in their bodies. They want to turn us into whatever they want us to be, like a snake or whatever, because our DNA is being changed completely on so many millions of Americans. So they have an agenda, these people, and they're all in it, and it's been going on for a long time, this plan. And they have got a lot of people to give them the arm for the shot. And, it's sad because I see a lot of Christians that were in so much fear of this man, the devil, and we only have to fear God. That's what the Bible calls for us to do. So it's sad what's happening to the world, but that's their agenda.
Turning into
the snake back in the Garden of Eden.
It's interesting, the snake is a symbol of medicine and, the serpent in the Garden of Eden. It's fascinating. Brianna, do you have a final comment? Then I want to get to Josie. But this has been a great report, and we'll pick it up next week. There's a lot of things to talk about, especially this Luciferian government. Sounds fascinating and dangerous.
Yeah, Josie's right. It's just been going on for a really long time, this plan and this agenda. But, I'm going to go now. But
okay.
What was that thing that I was supposed to say?
Oh, yeah.
This is government
inquiry.
Bye-bye.
I want you to sound like a real – so do like the reporter thing. Say, this is Brianna Cannon for Action Radio, the government inquiry reporter. So just make up your own. Have some fun with it.
Okay. This is Brianna Cannon, government inquiry reporter.
Sounds good. Thanks, Brianna. All right, here we go.
Bye.
Bye now. She started off as a poor child in Nicaragua, living under communism. And now she is a prosperous small businesswoman with a great family, living the dream as an American citizen. Josie Cossey knows all about both worlds, communism and freedom. She knows where your dreams can come alive and where they can die very quickly. And so her report is as much from experience as knowledge. And her passion and crusade are very real. With connections all over Central and South America, Josie brings you the world south of the U.S. border from personal experience, living, not just reporting, what's happening. And now, the Latina Report with Josie Cossey.
Yeah, I think we have the smartest teenager on the radio. This is so much fun to talk to you.
Good morning.
Dobre utra.
Yeah, it's not dobre utra. Buenos dias a mi gente latina. I guess we might have to change it around a little bit because lately I've been bringing reports from Ukraine, not just from south of the border here.
Make a new theme? Should I do my Ukrainian accent?
Yeah.
All right. Okay. And now we have Josie Cossey with the Ukrainian report on Action Radio, direct from. I'll get some Ukrainian music. That's okay. You're still Latina. You can report from Ukraine as a Latina.
Yeah.
And now the Ukrainian Latina report. Yeah. Okay. We just, In fact, you just pretend you're in Ukraine sometime. And now, direct from Ukraine, Josie Cossey. What's going on there?
Maybe we can put a little thing about Speedy Gonzalez. Andale, andale, arriba, 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 dale.
if you I wonder if I could get some kind of, well, it has to be to get the right music or something like that. But yeah, as long as it's not copyright, I can do it. That's why I play those classical things at the end of the show, because it's they're not copyright anymore because they've all run out. So I can play that kind of stuff. You get me a Speedy Gonzalez thing I can play on the radio. You should come on sometime. Josie Gonzalez, Speedy Gonzalez. Tell me the words. You know what they actually mean.
Like you and people, they talk so fast. I can hardly understand
why is
my
that?
Own language.
How do you talk Spanish that fast?
They talk. And the Puerto Rican and Dominican Republic, those three countries, they talk so fast.
Huh.
But,
interesting.
Okay. Too fast.
So tell me, Josie Gossi, the Latino reporter from Ukraine. Tell me what's going on in Ukraine.
Yeah, from Ukraine.
You can do Ukrainian accent. Yes, we have the Spanish-Ukrainian accent. That'll sound interesting. Go for it.
But I wanted to mention one of my friends. She's not doing too well from the vaccines. Full of blood clots in her lungs. And yesterday they had to rush her to one of the local hospitals. She's been bleeding and bleeding and bleeding because, you know, they give her blood thinners. So it's making her bleed so much.
I hate blood thinners. Yeah. Blood thinners almost killed me. Remember when I told everybody 3 weeks after my successful open heart surgery to repair the mitral valve, which worked really well, I almost died from blood thinners because my chest filled up with 4.5 liters of fluid. It's a good thing they didn't put me on a ventilator because they would have killed me for sure. But this is before COVID, so they didn't do that. So fortunately, they just drained the fluid out, which I've never understood why with people whose chests are filling with fluid, they didn't know what they did for me. Take the fluid out.
Yeah.
Let your lungs reinflate. Let your body take care of they can't get all of it, but they get like 98% of it. And then your body can take care of the rest. So why didn't they do that with the COVID people? I've never understood that.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it worked for me.
It's an agenda about this whole thing, you know, Greg, and we know it. I wish you would listen to me, and I have sent videos and everything, and I have offered to guide her to different doctors or, you know, to get help.
Why don't they listen? Why? Let's talk about that. Why? What's the blockage? Because what you're saying makes perfect sense. Just be skeptical. Why is it so hard to ask questions? Is it like climate change? Is it the same fear? You can't see COVID. You can't measure it. You can't see it coming. It's not like rain. It's not like a fog. You know, it's intangible. Yeah. It's a microbe.
I think what's happening, and I can see it on my friend and a lot of people that I talk to.
Uh-huh.
I believe what it is we're so trained, we're brain trained since we're young to trust the doctors and the hospital. And, you know, it should be normal for you to trust your own doctor. And like I said, there's a friend of mine at church. She's been seeing the same doctor for 20-something years. And he's the one telling her, get the shots and get the boosters. And I said, no, you need to flee from that doctor. And she goes, but why would he do that? I said, because the money's so good. They don't care about you at all.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think that's where we're at right now, that these people, she's not listening to anything I said, and two or three of my friends have reached to her and said, look, Josie can guide you and help you detox, whatever it takes, but she needs to get rid of those blood thinners right away.
Absolutely.
She's bleeding and bleeding.
I will never take one again.
Yesterday.
Yeah. I don't know what they're supposed to do, but they told me, I said, they put me on them, and I'm still like delusional after heart surgery. And they say, well, you got to take these like a few days later. I'm like, why? So well, you might get a stroke. Well, I didn't want a stroke. And then I asked them after a while, I said, why are you giving me these? What's the purpose here? Well, because you might have a stroke. Okay, well, how do you get a stroke? That was the next question I asked. And they said, well, from inactivity.
Yeah.
I said, wait a minute, I'm the most active person you've ever had on this hospital ward. I'm the one up flirting with the nurses. I'm the one walking around. I'm the one passing by people in their hospital rooms, you know, who've been there, you know, days longer than me, and I'm waving at them. Come on, get up, walk around.
Yeah.
You know, and I said, I'm the most, why would you give blood thinners to the person who's the most active and therefore the least susceptible to a stroke? Well, that's policy. And that's when I said, okay, that's it. You know, I think I took him for a little while afterwards. And then, but then I went back. Actually, this is when I went back the second time to the hospital and questioned it. But you have to question everything.
Yeah.
You know, and I tried to do the things that made sense. I mean, the heart surgery made sense, but I got five opinions. I got five different doctors, including one at Stanford Med, one of their top cardiologists. I mean, I went to the top before I did this. And they all said the same thing, and it all made sense. So I'm like, okay, that's why I consented to the surgery. And obviously it worked because I'm here. My heart's fine, and I could have been dead by now. They said I had, 20% chance of dying in the next 5 years from myocarditis, exactly what people are dying from with the COVID shots. So I know exactly what that could have been, because that's what they said I might have had a problem, had a serious problem with, and it could have killed me, So there's several chances I've been, with potentially fatal things, potentially fatal heart condition, definitely, fatal chest filling up. But you've got to ask questions. You've got to. Where did this come from? This divine doctor thing. The doctors are always right, because I've never had. I'll explain that in a second. But what do you think that comes from? Is it the cult of the expert?
Well, I don't know. It's on agenda years and years ago, I guess, to kill us or to give us the food. It's just
the thought that people.
Yeah.
But people don't question the expert. Let me ask you this, because we used to have our liberal on the show. So all the time she says, Dr. Fauci is an expert. Do you know more than he does? I'm like, well, probably. I may not know more than he does, but I certainly have a brain and I can look at things, and they're always, but the experts, it's like the white coat syndrome. Remember that experiment where they had people torturing people in the next room with electric charges? And the doctor says, the guy in the white coat, well, they didn't answer the question right. You've got to give them another shock. And they're actually giving enough power, electric shock, to kill people because the expert told them to.
Yeah.
So what is this cult of the expert? Where, at what point did you realize that, in Nicaragua, the government was lying to you? And if they're lying to you, then why aren't the doctors lying to you? And they're all lying to you.
Well, I think poor people like us and my family, we never went to the doctor. So we didn't have to face the guy with a white coat, Unless you had a little bit more money. And my mom never went to the hospital, unless the child was almost dying at the end. But I had about six siblings dying just from diarrhea or minor things because they didn't believe going in hospitals when I was a young girl.
So, and that's so easy to cure, too.
I know, it's so stupid, but the ignorance of a lot of Latino back in those days, they let your children die over diarrhea or minor things. But I think the agenda of killing us, it's been going on for a long time with the cancer, with schizophrenia, bipolar, all the vaccines have been spiked for 40-something years, Dr. Judy Mikovits said.
Mm-hmm.
And this is now in full force, every innocent American with the vaccine, and now I heard that they're gonna start injecting the cows and chickens so everybody can be fully vaccinated, like it or not.
Check out the show yesterday. We had the and check out our special investigation. Well, check out our special investigation support, Tom Renz, who I actually connected with on Facebook. Hopefully, I'll get him on the show one day. But he testified before the Missouri State House. Before Missouri State Legislature, and he's talking about this, that the manufactured, the lab-grown meat and the food processing. So if you stay away from processed food, you're okay. They're not going to just, thin needles injecting, oranges in the field, at least not yet. But they will put it into the factory food. So if something's genetically modified, it's not a big step from genetically modified food to genetically modified messenger RNA food. It's not that big a jump. And so that's the problem. So that's actually, he testified about that happening. So you're right on. You're absolutely right on with that. But again, the answer is, as always, real food, natural food, fruits, vegetables, meats, some carbs, but not many, but, natural bread, things like that, natural pasta. Don't get, the more processed food is, the more dangerous it is. Eat natural. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. Last week I had a veteran in my store, he might have been like 56 years old, a black man, and
a youngster.
He's still young. He has disability because he got hurt in the military, blah, blah, blah. But he says in 1999, he started working for Coca-Cola, and he said he was working at the plant, him making the Coke. He says, since he started working in Coca-Cola, he will never drink one more drop of Coca-Cola. He said, you know what put him in Coke? And I said, I want to know because my husband loves Cokes, you know. He said, don't drink it. He said, what they're putting is acid, like from batteries. That's why you can, with a half of a can of a Coca-Cola, you can call it the filthiest toilet, and you can make it look spotless. So,
yeah, I don't
that,
know. Okay, so
says,
so let's analyze that a little bit. I don't think they're actually, if they're actually putting battery acid, you know, they'd be reported, they'd all be in jail.
That's what he says.
So okay, so let's ask why they would do that. That's like saying, you know, we're going to put chemicals on airplanes and have chemtrails. You know why? So let's ask a why. Why would Coca-Cola do that when Coca-Cola naturally? I mean, they clean pennies with Coke. You know, you drop a penny in a bottle of Coke or Coke, and the next day it's all
exactly.
shiny. Okay, so
why?
But they're not adding. That's not battery acid that's doing that. It's just the natural acid
that's
in
what
the
he
Coke.
Said.
Okay, so
why
so
would he
but, all right, so
me? I don't even know the guy.
Okay, so he,
yeah.
so all right, let's be clear though, because you know we're making a permanent record here of our podcast.
That's
it,
what
to
he
me,
said.
It seems, okay, so all right, so we'll take it at face value. That's what he said. Now, did he say that Coke acts like battery acid, or did he say they're actually adding battery acid into Coke? Let's make that real clear, because there's a difference.
He said he was making Coke. He worked in the plant, and he said they put acid. I said, what kind of acid? He says battery acid. That's what we put in the ingredients to make Coke. Why, since 1999,
yeah.
I have not had one Coke product at all.
Okay.
Including
yeah,
Sprite.
Battery acid is sulfuric acid.
So how would
that
get it? I didn't know that. That's
good
to know.
They don't use no battery acid. They, you know what they use Coke? Coke has been used to clean off the battery terminals on automobile batteries. People pour it on there, and it does foam up. And they use, and also you can use to clean your windshield too.
So what's in the the syrup? Is there a sulfur compound in the syrup that allows this to happen?
It's a secret. It's a secret ingredient. The menu.
Yeah, but anybody can
remember?
Take it to a private lab and get a spectral analysis of it. I mean, it's not that hard to do. They can't release it.
Yeah,
it's private, but they can find out what's in it. So let's assume sulfur compounds.
Yeah,
so you got carbonation, right? You've got carbon dioxide. You've got carbonated things in there. So you've got oxygen. So you've got sulfuric acid is H2SO4. So H2O plus SO4. So H2O, you got water. The primary ingredient in soda is water, so that's where the H2O comes from. SO4, the sulfur, there's sulfide compounds in all kinds of food. So there's got to be a high concentration of sulfur something in Coca-Cola that mixes with the carbonated, with the carbon dioxide that forms an acidic compound. That would make sense. I'll buy that. But the fact that they buy battery acid on the open market and put it in Coke, no. They'd all be in jail. That, I think that's wrong. Josie, what do you think?
So the poison of King Cobra that they got in the vaccine and got it in everybody's arm, do you think that everybody should be in jail?
Oh, everybody.
Same
well,
thing.
let's say where
same
the liability
thing.
Is. Well, wait a minute. Hold on.
They've
no,
been
it,
killing.
Yeah, I actually I do think they should be in jail. I think that
of course.
So anybody that gave a jab and didn't know it was in it, that would include all the pharmacists. Okay. Of course, all of Big Pharma, especially Pfizer, pretty much anybody that worked for Pfizer that had any connection with the production, marketing, distribution of their non-vaccine vaccine, you know, there's a potential liability there. Now, the problem is that the law doesn't give them any liability. So you cannot establish liability until the law passes, which is going to get into my topic the next hour, that we're complaining too much and not acting. So our vaccine bill is 2 years
exactly.
old. Had that bill passed 2 years ago, everything that happened since, so this would have been March, I wrote it March 31st, 2021. So
mm-hmm.
the jab had only been out
yeah.
since December. Think about that. It got to Capitol Hill in December. All right, so let's do a timeline. So December, mid-December, Nancy Pelosi brings the jab to Capitol Hill. Guess who got it? Brian Sitnick, you know, Capitol Hill police officer. Now, they've never confirmed it, but I pretty much guarantee he got the jab. Why else would he drop dead of a stroke mm-hmm. 3 weeks later? Perfectly healthy 40-year-old
yeah.
man. Okay. So let's assume that there's a really good possibility Brian Sitnik got the jab, Capitol Hill Police got the jab, and then it came out. So then he had January 6th, then he had January 20th, Brandon gets put in the White House illegally, and then 2 months later, January, February, March, 2 months later, I'm already writing, and then, of course, then he brings out the mandates, right? You know, Brandon brings out the mandates pretty quickly.
Yeah.
And so, but within 2 months of him, you know, occupying the White House, we already had a bill for full vaccine product liability. That's how fast we reacted to this. And yet nothing's happened with it.
Yeah.
I don't get it.
It's a shame.
Yeah.
But Greg, this killing of innocent America, it's been going on for a long time with a lot of things. GMO modified foods, injecting our chickens with hormones so they can be huge. You buy a chicken breast or a chicken leg, it looks like a freaking turkey leg. Doesn't look like a chicken sometimes. And this has been going on in every aspect of our daily life eating in America. When I was in Cuba, I can tell the difference even when I went to the bathroom eating the food over there that is not modified like here. So everything that they're doing, and I'm not surprised what that man told me about the acid. Of course, they're going to put a tiny percentage of it. You know, they're not going to put a lot to kill you right when you drink one Coca-Cola, you know. So it's been going on for a long time with so, so many different things. Our water. I truly believe that our water from our faucet or bottled water, it's what's making everybody get hip replacement, knee replacement, shoulder replacement. It's attacking the big joint, big muscles in your body. And I believe that's been going on for years now. And we have never seen anything like it.
So what's in the water that's doing it? What's in the bottled water that's doing it?
I don't know.
Is it just because they're in plastic?
I don't know, but...
So have you seen a correlation between...
No, I don't think it's just the plastic. I think it's the chemicals because, you know, I was buying some of the water at the local market there, and it was the big, big 24-pack for $4 or whatever.
Right.
And I noticed when I opened it, it smells almost like kerosene. And I'm like, honey, something is wrong here.
That could be the plastic
good.
Packaging.
This is not good at all.
Yeah. Well, I'm not sure. It could be the plastic packaging because that's a petroleum
but
product.
But some of them smell and some don't. Some do, some don't.
That's
so
interesting.
So we're not, and it is, the odor is so strong. And I'm like, oh, my gosh. But anyway, if you have anything else to ask me or whatever, but I wanted to get into my Ukrainian thing here.
Well, I don't have to ask you, but let's save it for your report first, see how much time we have after you're done. I'd rather hear your stuff first.
Okay. I was watching different platforms within the last couple days, few days, with different interviews from different military and Ukraine. The U.S. push for the destruction and death using Ukraine as a proxy the entire time, you know, the goal is to collapse Ukraine so that NATO will use the land to fight Russia. And that's bottom line what's been going on. And right now, George Soros, Vanguard, BlackRock, now own most of the land in the Ukraine. I did not know that. You know, and the Pentagon has been running the 46 bioweapon labs in the Ukraine, which now they're admitting it.
Mm-hmm.
And before they were kind of like denying it and dance around that question when they were asked. And they say, oh, they're just labs, but they are bioweapon. There were four in Kiev. And I was talking to one of my Ukrainian friends when one of the explosion was going on and we had to hang up. And she threw herself on the floor with the phone screaming.
Wow.
The U.S. used to roll out the digital tracking system that now is trackable by our U.S. government. And, you know, Microsoft runs all Ukraine government servers. So bottom line is, the U.S. owns Ukraine right now. And that's why these people are desperate. these people are want to send all our money to the Ukraine. They want to pay a lot of Ukrainians for retirement. So everything is about Ukraine because they've been using Ukraine to fight Russia because Ukraine is what started the war in the Ukraine, you know, not
Russia.
Well,
we started the war. Russia invaded, but we set the conditions for it. Yeah, we set the conditions. Remember when Dr. Peter Pry talked about it? He said, look, the easy way out of this is that you don't recognize Ukraine. You don't make them part of NATO. You just leave Eastern Europe alone.
Yeah.
And of course, my answer was we should have pulled out of NATO. Apparently, we've got a couple of websites here on live chat. Marco in the Netherlands has one on phosphoric acid as in Coca-Cola. That's just just to follow up on that. But so let's ask the question. So what is it about the Ukraine? I got a couple of theories. One, that we always have to be at war somewhere. That's what the permanent war class wants. John Bolton wanted us at war with Venezuela. He wants us at war in Syria. Now, we've had Iranians, you know, use drone technology that they got from our drone, of course, right? They're blowing up Americans. They blew up what they call a contractor, what I would call a mercenary. You know, so an American mercenary, you know, a soldier paid for money, soldier of fortune, right, gets killed over in Syria where we should not be. That Trump tried to pull us out. And now now Rand Paul finally is trying to get rid of the authorized use of military force, the AUMF doctrine. But my question is, is Ukraine just the successor to, you know, our series of wars from Iraq to Afghanistan to Ukraine? Is this just that we have to be at war somewhere? So the permanent war class, the military industrial complex is happy. Is that just the next step after the surrender in Afghanistan? What do you think?
Well, go ahead, Bianchi. You haven't talked.
Yeah, you know, Ukraine, wasn't that Yanukovych that was overthrown in Ukraine?
Uh-huh.
He was elected.
And who overthrew
him? During the Obama administration.
Obama.
Yeah.
That's an Obama coup. And apparently Obama is funding, we say U.S. government, but it's really Obama, is funding the opposition in Israel to their judicial reforms and to Netanyahu. Because Obama hates Israel and certainly hates Netanyahu.
Yeah, he does.
You know, so he's got his hands in all kinds of really horrible things, but that's pretty typical for him. So, you know, that's why he was a terrible president.
So basically, our government has played Zelensky in office. He's a puppet. I think he's a lover of Obama, actually, as a stripper. so this has been planned. This has been well organized. I know Putin is not a little angel, but Putin has been complaining for years, and Putin is afraid about all those bioweapon labs because some of them are so close. And the torturing of innocent Ukraine, and it's been going on for a long time by Zelensky now. And Russia has rescued so many families, so many. And Russia rescued over 40,000 children from underground child trafficking that they had in some of those labs, experimenting different things, you know. And now they've been accusing Putin that he has kidnapped so many Ukrainian children, and you know, a lot of these children are Russian, actually, and American children. There's children from all over the world that Putin has rescued for safety. I was listening to a video, and I understand some of the Ukrainian that they were saying about so many people happy that Putin has rescued so many families from being tortured by Zelensky's regime in his country by neo-Nazis and regular military Ukrainian. And of course, like my girlfriend, her husband is a young military husband, and he comes home and visits for a little bit, and then they have to go back. But I can believe they're still alive because they're not giving them new uniforms, they're not giving them blankets, and so the people have to give them all the stuff that they need. And she was asking for donation. I'm like, I'm sorry, I'm not giving donations to military at the time. If it was for food for you and your children, which I have been sending her money, I will do that. But I'm not supporting any Ukrainian military ever, because they are being sent to murder, torture, rape, saying Ukrainian and then point the finger at Putin, and Putin's not doing that at all. Instead, they've been crucifying some of the Russian young men, horrible, that I have videos to prove it. But I will not show that to a regular human being because it is horrible what they've been doing. But
well, they've got a history of, you look at the World War II history, this has been horrible, the things that have happened. I mean, some real atrocities, including the Holocaust, you know, as pressure from Ukraine.
Yeah.
Hey, let me ask you a question. How much of Ukraine favors Russia either taking all or part of Ukraine, and which parts? Because we know we've got the southeast region, the Donbass. There we took Crimea, which traditionally was part of Russia anyway. In fact, Ukraine was traditionally part of Russia. So it's not like they're going after something they haven't had before. You'd be like losing Alaska to Russia and wanting it back, or it's like Russia wanting Alaska back. Well, they can't have it, but it was Russian at one point. Okay, it was their territory. We bought it, fair and square. But how much of Ukraine, especially the half that's west of the Dnieper River, you know, where Kiev is, that's Russian ethnicity anyway. How much of the population is kind of secretly hoping that Russia either claims part of it or controls it or beats the Ukrainian government in this war?
Well, the small little villages closer to Crimea are begging Russia to take over because he has rescued so many families near Crimea and those areas from being tortured, literally, by Ukraine. And I don't know how many small villages, we call them villages over there, will change. But I truly believe when Donald Trump returns, Ukraine will go back to the people and all the billions that we have spent in our tax over there throughout maybe 40 years or more, building all those bioweapon labs, child trafficking, adrenochrome, all the drug trafficking, money laundering with our corrupt government. It's going to stop, and this is going to be worldwide. And I know, my thing is that it's going to be worldwide takeover to help all these countries. There's a lot of people praying in Colombia, in Chile, with different people I've been praying with. It's going to happen at one time here and all over the world because some of these countries are on board with Donald Trump, but the countries not on board, they're going to be left behind. So that's what we think that is happening.
Yeah, you got from what Brianna was talking about with the world government. This is going to be countries that want the world government because they're going to get money. And there'll be countries that don't want the world government like us. Well, the population doesn't want the world government, but the elites do. So it's going to be an interesting fight. I'm just. Does Ukraine have an active secret police force, like the Gestapo, like the Stasi, you know, like our FBI now, things like that? Do they have like murder assassination squads? Do they have all the worst of totalitarian things? I don't know I don't know a name for like a Ukrainian secret police force.
Well,
like
they got their secret neo-Nazis in Ukraine, and it's been going
on
for a long
time. But do they have an organized, like, Savak, you know, the Iranian secret police, or who is that? The Stasi was, I think, East German.
Mm-hmm.
The Gestapo was Nazi German. So Russia had the KGB, you know, China has whatever, the entire Communist Party. But does Ukraine have a recognizable secret police government arm that we would know about or be able to investigate? You know, because you talk about the atrocities and the crucifixions and things like that. Is that organized through the government, or is that just being done by the soldiers? You know, but is there an organized government agency that actually does that, like the Gestapo tortured and killed, or like the you know, the death camps, you know, the Holocaust? What does Ukraine have in terms of that?
Well, what I understand is Ukraine has the regular police, and they have their regular military, but they also have the neo-Nazis behind the scene, and a lot of people, they blend in with the military, actually. That's what they've been doing. But once, like I said, once the takeover worldwide, Ukraine is going to be free again. And like I said, Trump is behind cleaning Ukraine, because this corrupt government of ours, including the Pentagon and State Department, they've been all in it for years. The corruption is so deep. Our military been coming home in coffins, and the boxes are full of diamonds from the Congo, drugs, money.
Do you have pictures?
You name it.
Do you have pictures of open coffins with diamonds and stuff in them?
No.
Do we have any photo records of it?
Open coffins.
Okay, I just want to check.
And, you know, my ex-husband told me stuff like that a long time ago, and I didn't believe him because I wasn't very involved. I didn't care.
Right.
And I'm like, man, I remember he was CIA, my ex-husband, and he knew a lot. He knew a lot. Let me tell you, he had an office in the Capitol.
Oh no! Listen, I watched the film with Denzel Washington and Russell Crowe about the drug dealer in Harlem. You know, I think it was back in the '70s. That was bringing cocaine directly from heroin directly from the
heroin.
Golden Triangle, Vietnam, Cambodia, and Laos, where they grow all the opium poppies.
Yeah.
And he went directly to the source and brought it on U.S. military aircraft in Congress.
Yeah.
So that's I know that happens. But again, you know me, I like to have a record, and I like to have some kind of evidence and sources on that. But I think that's just responsible show stuff. So let me ask another question. So the reason I asked about a Ukrainian secret police agency that's committing atrocities is because, you remember the Boland Amendment? I covered this on the show, I guess, 2 or 3 weeks ago. This is where the Democrats, and I think rightly so, they're right on this. They made this Boland Amendment. And Boland was a congressman from Massachusetts. And he said, okay, we're going to give you a budget, but you can't spend money on the Contras. Okay. So every authorization bill that went through had a Boland amendment. You know, here's your bill for health and human services. Here's your education. Here's your appropriation for this, but you can't spend money on the Contras. In other words, you can't transfer money from the EPA budget to the Contras, because they would do that. Obama was famous for taking money from one department and then funding his pet communist causes.
Yeah.
So if there were an organized Ukrainian secret police, you know, Holocaust force, torturing force, killing force, things like that, then Congress could say, we're going to give money to Ukraine, but it can't go to this agency. You know, they could have like a Boland Amendment for that. But if the atrocities are just being done by the regular army, you know, so there's not an organized, identifiable security state force like the KGB and the Gestapo, then it's harder to do because they're masking the money. So in other words, they're taking money for the infantry and sending it to the death squads. But they're not identifying the death squads because they don't have an organized government entity. That's why I'm asking the question.
I don't know. I'm not sure about that. I have to investigate, I guess, about that. Mm-hmm. But all I know is this corrupt government, including Republicans too, not just Democrats. They've been in it for years, sending money to different countries, and a lot of the millions come right back into their hands.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what's happening to Ukraine. Because I asked my friends in Ukraine, are you guys getting any help? They said, nope. Zero help, no money. We haven't seen any dollars, no money, no help at all from the United States. So that's why Biden made that trip to St. Croix Island to divide all the money they came back, the $60 billion with a B that we sent to Ukraine. They pay off the neo-Nazis and they pay Zelensky. Zelensky's got billions of dollars to throw with his leaders there. So they're having a blast, a good time. And all the money came right back to the hands of the criminals running our country, which is Obama and his puppets. That's what's been going on.
Okay.
And it's
been going on for years and years. Oh, no, I know that. But let me ask you a couple of questions. There's two things I want to talk about before you go. One is Trump's speech, and the other is this trip by, VP in residence, Kamala Harris. You know, who's attempting to be African-American, Indian, Jamaican, illegal alien, whatever she is, but she's in Africa right now. So my question is, have any of your sources come up with what she's really doing there? And I ask Pianki the same question. What's she really doing there? You know, and the reason I'm suspicious is the only African, real African, that's in the White House press corps is not allowed to ask a question. So how come...
Yeah.
The person occupying the vice president's office can go to Africa, and the only genuine African in the White House press corps can't ask about it. So what's she really doing there? Because we know St. Croix Island was money laundering. So what she? So why did she go to Singapore? I mean, obviously we don't have, you know, relationship problems with Singapore, you know, but and why is she in Ghana? Why is she touring Africa? What policies are we advancing? Or are they just getting rid of her?
I don't know. Trying to get more money away, probably, or spend money. But yeah, I never liked Kamala.
We already spend money in Africa.
She's fake. Like I said, Obama's running the show. Obama's allowing all the, and you know, you don't hear anymore talking about the Muslim Brotherhood anymore. Have you noticed that? Because
I hadn't actually, but you're right.
With Obama. Yeah.
Well, he doesn't need them anymore, unless he is the Muslim Brotherhood. Yeah. Well, let's go ahead, Pianki.
Kamala is based on skin color. That's it.
But why
skin color?
But why is she? Well, I know why she was selected. No, she was selected because she's the only person who was worse than Joe Biden, so they wouldn't want to get rid of Joe Biden and actually get a decent vice president. If you had a decent Democrat, I mean, you'd have to look hard. But if you could find somebody like a moderate, say Joe Manchin. Let's just say, for example, Joe Manchin was Joe Biden's running mate, and he was vice president. Do you think anybody would have any hesitation about removing Joe Biden and putting Joe Manchin in, even though he's a Democrat? I don't think so.
I
think it would have been switched out, you know, day two. Well, let me ask you about Trump's speech then. Tell me, did you see the speech, and have you heard the – so what did you think about that? And why was it in Waco?
Well, I don't know why he told. Maybe because of the 30-year of the killing of innocent Americans by our CIA, FBI, and at the time Bill Clinton as a president. But President Trump was really, really tearing Ron DeSantis down. I'm like,
well, Ron DeSantis isn't a threat. He's not even running. He's not declared. He's who the deep state would love to run because they think he's the only person that can actually beat Donald Trump, which, of course, is just wishful thinking. What about Mike Pence? Mike Pence, you know, screwed over Donald Trump in the country. I mean, he's the one who's due the nomination.
Didn't.
Oh,
but you're going to find out later that he's part of the plan. Mike Pence, Jeff Sessions is part of the plan. A lot of these people are part of the plan. It's supposed to happen like that to catch all these people in the act. And now President Trump, he's been talking so bad about Ron DeSantis, but don't believe everything that you hear from him saying about Donald Trump. It's a trap. It's a trap. Mm-hmm. We were told President Trump is very close with Ron DeSantis, actually. So, yeah.
Oh, I'm sure they're best friends. I think the whole thing's an act.
But here's
what's interesting. Here's what's interesting to me. This is what I'm curious about your reaction to. Trump talked about he knows who the good people are in Washington. He knows who the bad people are. Mm-hmm. He knows who the America First is. I think he already has his cabinet. I think this is an amazing situation. I think a lot of things were revealed in that speech that if you listen to it, and of course most people, the Trump haters didn't hear a thing, but the Trump lovers are like, oh, this is great. Yeah, he sounds great. But if you really start listening, I mean, people always tell you what they're going to do because they can't help it because they want you to be impressed. So what Trump was saying was he knows who the good people are. I think he's already formed his cabinet. I think he's working his way down. I think he already has the executive orders ready to go to reverse everything Brandon did. I think he's actually taken the first 2 years to figure out everything that went wrong, and that process is over. Now he's basically running unopposed in the primaries. Nobody's going to be able to challenge him in the primaries, which means he gets a two-year. He had 2 years of evaluation of what went wrong. You notice he's not talking about how wonderful warp speed is. And the only thing he said on the jabs was that if any college mandates a vaccine, which is a non-vaccine, or a mask, they're not getting any money. That's the only thing he said about COVID.
Yeah.
I found that fascinating. Okay. He said he's got his cabinet basically ready to go. In fact, I think he's got most of the government ready to go. He's got all the executive orders to reverse everything Brandon did. In fact, he might have an executive order, the one that says the following executive orders are reversed. He could reverse all the executive orders of Brandon with one executive order and do it 5 minutes after he takes the oath. He could do it walking down Pennsylvania Avenue. Yep, here's the executive order. Donald J. Trump.
And if you notice that a lot of people were talking about he never said he was running for president. You know,
well,
for 2024.
But think
he said
about
he was running
ask...
for president, but he never said for 2024.
No,
never.
I think he's running in 2028, but I used to think he'd be a good person. Now I want to see somebody else. I just don't know who yet. But do you? But
I
why? Here's who do you think?
It's really going to happen, but that's my thing, me. He's going to come back and just run his 4 years that they stole and then get elected again. That's what's going to happen, I believe.
Okay. Do you think Matt Gaetz wants to be president?
He already chose his vice president from last year, actually.
Who is it?
And I know you're going to say it's crazy, and I think it's crazy too, but the vice president for Donald Trump will be JFK Jr. And JFK Jr. was in Mount Rush last year before the 4th of July with David Strait, Don Jr., and Gene Ho, which is Trump. It was John's photographer. And
yeah, you're right. I think that's crazy. I don't think that's going to happen.
It is.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
That's what we were told. So he already chose his vice president, JFK Jr. He already created all the money that we're going to be circulating soon. It's in Texas, ready to go. And he'll be back to take over the country. He's going to make America better than what it was before.
I think he's
going to
make it better, but he's not going to do it with JFK Jr. First of all, JFK Jr., if he were alive, which I don't think he is, but even if he were, he'd be a Democrat. Why? Now, what about RFK Jr.?
But
how about Robert Francis? What if the Democrats run Robert Francis Kennedy Jr., who is alive, who runs Children's Health Defense, who's supremely anti-vax, but he's still a Democrat. But he's probably the best Democrat out there as far as Democrats go. What if he runs against Trump?
I believe a lot of the Kennedys have turned their back to the Democrat Party.
Okay.
Yeah, because of what they have seen, and they want to honor his father's name and not with this corrupt system that we've been going through for years and years. So this system has been so corrupt and we do not know, but I believe the intelligent military has well organized step by step what's going to happen to America, and they're allowing it. We're in World War III, and in war, people die, and that's why we have all these people dying. And when I was at the event in Nashville, the doctors were saying towards the end of this year, there's going to be so much death that is.
Well, I've seen it. You see it on the news every day. Every day on the news, you read about some young person who died. Some days you read about several young people who have died.
Yeah.
And they say natural causes.
Right now you see, oh, so-and-so had a stroke. Oh, so-and-so had a heart attack. Oh, so-and-so a kidney failure. Oh, pneumonia. Oh, take it to the hospital. But this is going to be boom, boom, boom. So many collapsing and dying. And right now, I forgot which area in Europe, somebody was reporting that there's so much death in Europe. I think it's in England that they're putting the bodies, because they don't have room in the hospital, they're putting bodies in people's garage right now. And,
yeah, I don't believe it.
I think it's in England.
Yeah, I don't believe that. Yeah,
well, that's what
I
heard somebody reporting.
Oh, that's fine. No, I don't mind. Listen, believe me, I love hearing what you hear, but, you know, it always goes through my logic and reason filter. Why would they do that?
Well, I didn't say I seen it. I said I heard.
See, now remember, England's a country that went through World War II. They lost hundreds of thousands of soldiers, and I don't think they ended up in garages. So why would you do that now for the vaccine when, you know, obviously wartime was killing a lot more people? Now, overall, in the long term, you know, England might lose as many people to COVID shots as they did in World War II. But World War II was over from 1939 to 1945 for Britain. So they were in it basically 6 years. Poland was invaded in 1939. That's when the war really started for Europe. Started in Asia in 1937, you know, when Japan invaded China. But that makes sense. I don't see that. But what I do see, though, is massive problem of people.
The vaccine is going to kill half of the world, period.
But who's taking it now? Most people aren't taking it. The booster rate in the United States is, what, 16%?
They already did. At least 75% of our military has taken the shots.
Okay, they've taken the shots, but how many people have taken the boosters?
They're collapsing.
I know that. I just saw a special with David Trombley and Tom Stewart, both of whom are veterans, both of whom have been on our show, and they were on a recent One American News show. So how much of the population has taken the booster? I think it's only about 16%. Most people are not taking the shots anymore, and they're not giving their kids the shots because they don't believe in them anymore.
They're taking the flu shot, Greg, and the flu shot spiked with AIDS. Yeah, there's going to be an epidemic in America like you've never seen before. It's coming.
Now, remember, have you seen my post on Facebook? I said, why are there so many AIDS ads on TV for AIDS testing? And then I said, HIV's in the jab. Judy Mikovits told us that there's AIDS in the messenger RNA, in the non-vaccine jab. Now it's in the flu shot. Do you remember that? Judy told us
they're brainwashing you. They're brainwashing you. They're putting it in your head that AIDS is about to come. See, these people, they right in your face, and we're like sleeping. Most people are sleeping. They don't get it, you know?
No, I know, but what's interesting about the ad, but what the ad says is that you can have sex with people and not worry about catching AIDS if you take this drug. That was fascinating. In other words, what they're saying is, let's get the motivations. Why would the government put out an ad, and I'm sure it's a government ad, that says that we, you know, making AIDS testing at this particular time, this is only about in the last couple months. This is new.
Uh-huh.
So there's an ad out now with minority people involved, you know, so it's diverse, right? But they talk about AIDS testing, and then it says that in the end of the ad, it talks about having sex with people and not worrying about it because you can't catch AIDS if you take this drug and you get tested regularly. I find that fascinating. Are they trying to spread AIDS again? You know, that's what it sounds like. Because the effort, when they said before, that remember the fear before, AIDS was primarily transmitted through gay men and intravenous drug users. Those were the two communities most affected, right? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So, but they said AIDS can get to everybody, which wasn't true. You know, if you didn't have unprotected or gay sex and you didn't take intravenous needles into your arm, you know, you had a really, really good chance of not catching AIDS unless something bizarre happened somewhere along the way. I don't even know, you know, blood transfusion, things like that. So AIDS was really easily avoided by just avoiding a couple of different things. But yeah, they tried to convince you otherwise. Now, what are they trying to convince us of now and why? So, you know me, I always want to ask why. Why now?
Well,
why are the AIDS ads out now? Why they say everybody should get tested like it's a normal thing? People don't have to get tested for AIDS unless you're in a high-risk group. And you're not in a high-risk group unless you're, you know, you're a practicing gay man with multiple partners and you're taking drugs with a needle. Otherwise, you really don't have to worry about it. Right?
Because the HIV virus is being injected in your system through boosters and flu shot. That's what's going on.
Exactly.
So they're trying to brainwash you like, oh, you can have sex with a partner. You're not going to get AIDS. And then they're going to say, oh, I guess we made a mistake. You did get AIDS from having sex with a partner. No, it was injected in your arm because you asked for it. That's what's happening right now.
But what's interesting is the ads aren't saying, if you've had a recent booster shot, get tested for AIDS. They're not saying that because they can't, right?
They're not stupid.
But we should make a commercial like that. In fact, I don't know if you've seen it yet, but I put it in your messenger. Did you see my Brandon speech with the Russian national anthem in the background?
I have to go check it out.
It's in your messenger. Yeah, it's pretty funny. Piankov. And I was debating whether to post it. Then I just said what I usually say. Ah, what the hell? What are they going to do to me now?
What the heck?
So I framed it, but I said the Biden enhanced speech. So YouTube, unless they're really sharp. In fact, they approved it. They said, oh, it's okay. Thanks, YouTube. Appreciate it. Anyway,
I want to tell all the audience before I get off the phone here. I have to go earn my living.
Right.
Please do not take one more shot ever again in your life. No shot for your little newborns or little kids ever again, ever. They've all been spiked for the last 40, 50 years, and we did not know about it. That's what your children have: autism, schizophrenia, cancer, death syndrome, bipolar, all this type of sickness, kidney failure. All this sickness comes from the vaccines that they give you right after you are born, and they force you to have it. Or if not, they'll come and take your children here in this country. So not another vaccine ever. That's how you're going to save your family. And I got to go.
Greg, no, I appreciate it. Listen, it's been a great report. This has been fun. But I'm going to do an, I need to show on early treatments for diseases that they're supposedly trying to prevent with vaccines.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well,
thanks,
God bless, and hasta la vista, amigo. So
hasta la vista,
you guys can reach me
baby.
Ándale, ándale.
Hey,
you can reach me
at
Ruth Uniform Shop on Allen Road in Pensacola.
Website, phone number,
Florida.
Anything you want to give? Website, phone number, Facebook page?
850-478-7756, and we do very well there. We're the information center. If you want to come and tell us what's going on at your hospital, your nursing home, come and tell us. And we can share it on Action Radio.
Exactly. Let's get it up on the radio, but we can do it anonymously. Thank you, Jesse. This is so much fun.
God bless.
Yes, your conduit of information, your secret dispersal point. So let me give you a round of applause. Thanks, Jesse.
All right. Bye. Ciao.
Take care. Bye now. Oh, boy. See all the silly things we do here? But, I mean, we take deadly serious topics and then still have fun because otherwise you'd go crazy. I said this before. The world government people aren't that smart, because what they've done is they've created a dangerous jab that's killing people and injuring them and crippling them and everything else. But what it's doing is it's killing and crippling the compliant, the ones that favor the big government, the ones that believe in the jab and believe in the experts. Those of us skeptical, rabble rousing resistors, we're the ones not taking it. So they're actually eliminating their supporters. it's like tobacco. Cigarettes kill the people who actually supported smoking cigarettes. And they died of lung cancer, a lot of them, most of them. I don't know how many. But the thing is that the same people that are pushing the jab, the people that are taking it, are the least, individualistic, believing in individual rights people out there. They're the compliant. They're the audience for Big Pharma. They're the ones who are listening to Big Pharma, and they're the ones who are dying. And it's really crazy. So if they were that smart, they would have tried to find a way to affect the resistors and not the compliant ones. Anyway, I'm going to take a break. Pianki, do you have a comment before I take a break?
No, I'll take a break.
Okay. It is 9:06 in the a.m. here, Central Time, on the Gulf Coast of Florida in Milton near Pensacola, with the world's most beautiful beaches. And I'm going to take a little do a couple things here, and let's play my Brandon thing, and then we'll get into something else.
Joe Biden's dark winter. No freedom, no liberty, no guns, no representation, no oil, no coal, no nuclear power, no space force, no constitution, no family gatherings, no vacations, just taxes, work, misery, masks, lockdowns, and ever more government. This is what will happen if you let Marxists steal the election. This has been a public service announcement of Action Radio, reminding you it's time to get off your butt and save your country.
Yeah, I'm actually going to have the title of the show material in the third hour here, so stand by for that. Here at Action Radio, we are looking for sponsors. We have 30 and 60-second spots available for your announcements, and we have 3-minute live call-ins to talk about your products and services available. Action Radio is the next evolution beyond talk radio. Join us and let us help your business evolve. Think about being a sponsor of the future and not just a listener, and help us help your business grow as you help us plunge headlong into breaking new ground here on Action Radio every day.
This is Greg Penglis for Strikeforce, your source for pure energy. Strikeforce is a concentrated energy drink that turns a half liter of your favorite beverage into an energy drink. You make your energy drink yourself. Action Radio is an affiliate of Strikeforce, so our listeners get a 20% discount. All you do is add our code, WYL, to the discount code window at checkout. WYL comes from our website, Write Your Laws. So, you can get your energy drink, a 20% discount, and help Action Radio change the relationship of we the people to our government. Not bad.
Strike Force is at StrikeForceEnergy.com. That's StrikeForceEnergy.com. Start your engine. Hello, this is Greg Penglis for our newest shooting range here in Milton, Florida. Stand Your Ground. My friend, Jason Myers, and crew are creating an incredible facility for our city. Stand Your Ground is located at 6632 Elva Street. The phone number is 850-789-1776. Their email is standyourground1776@gmail.com. Here you'll find either in process or already going an indoor shooting range, axe throwing, archery, a rage room, self-defense classes, concealed carry weapons classes, security license training, paintball, a full-service gun store, and 24/7 online ordering. So come on down or contact them by phone, email, or website and learn how you can best stand your ground. Action Radio, part of the ADHD Radio Network, the ultimate free speech zone. We the people give our consent to be governed through writing the laws by which we are governed, and have the power through juries to nullify the laws by which we do not consent to be governed. At Action Radio, we don't report the news. We are the news. Every other show reports what has happened. We talk about what can happen. From the questions no one has thought to ask, to the answers no one has thought to consider, to the actions no one has dared to take. That is Action Radio. Well, that sounds impressive. I should listen to the show. Actually, I do. Here and there, selectively, depending on what's going on. But there's so much. Because I hear it live the first time, it's a little different. Okay, we got a problem. We have a problem with this country right now, with conservatives, with activists, with all kinds of folks. They are what I call, and I've said this before on the show, raising complaining to an art form when we need action. And that's the title of the show today, Raising Complaining to an Art Form When We Need Action. And this is the hour when I want to deal with this. And so it is my continual fascination that people send me endless videos of other people doing shows, especially shows that I've already done like 2 years ago. I don't need those. You know, they'll send me shows. You got to check this information. And awesome. Is this information you already know? Well, yeah, but it's really good. Okay, is it information that that solves the problem? No, it's just information. Okay, so then why do I care? Why do I need to know things that I already know? Why do I need to have reinforced in my brain something, somebody else saying something that I've already said or already covered or already talked about years ago? When the real what we need now more than anything else is action. So for everybody that sends me a video, I say, well, have you shared a bill? Have you contacted a legislator? Have you contacted media? Have you called a talk show? Have you written a letter to the editor? Have you done anything to take any kind of positive action? And the answer universally is no. Okay. Well, that's not going to work. Our vaccine legislation is 2 years old as of March 31st. And that is in what? I mean, April 30th. Yeah, March 1st. So today is the 28th. So as of Friday, we could have had 2 years ago a bill in the national debate that would put full product liability on Big Pharma. All of it. People had seen, well, that's a good solution. I'm going to start telling my friends. And the friend said, you know, that's pretty good. I'm going to call a talk show. And then talk show says, oh, that's kind of interesting. I'll ask my audience to support it. Then the audience, you know, sends this stuff into Congress. And somebody in Congress said, you know, it's not a bad idea. I can't support it because Big Pharma will cut my funding. But, you know, it's a good idea. Okay. So that's how things happen. So the biggest problem we have right now is that people are so enamored with being the first to share information they already know. You know, it's like watching the third rerun of Top Gun Maverick. You know exactly what's going to happen. Yeah, of course it's cool, but you already know. It's like when you're listening to the radio, when you listen to classic rock, and they play a song that you're thinking of that you've heard at least 1,000 times or more over the last 50 years. Think, wow, that's a great song. I want to hear it again, even though you know all the notes, you know all the words, you know everything about it. So why do you need to hear it again? look for some new music. That's what, you know, I try to do that. I try and catch some of the new, a lot of it sucks, but that's okay. But the thing is, you've got to try something new because what we're doing isn't working. Obviously, it's not. The government's still the government, imposed a Marxist idiocracy. They're all a bunch of idiots, you know, in public and incredibly dangerous Marxists in private, and they're destroying the country. So they're winning. Okay? So unless you fight back, they're going to keep winning. And fighting back means what we do here. And I don't know who else is fighting back in terms of, I mean, a lot of people are fighting back with information, you know, get armed with the information. Okay, great. So you're armed with the information. Well, what do you do with it? Well, I don't know. Just be armed with the information. An informed public is an educated public is a useful public. No, it's not. An active public is, but an informed public is only half the battle. That's like having a gun without any ammo or knowing how to shoot it. Hey, the gun's great, but this is where we are right now. So everybody has the equivalent of the gun, but they don't have the bullets and they're not willing to pull the trigger. They're not willing to take the – so think of the bills. I'm sort of making up this metaphor as I go along. But if you think of the gun as the information, okay, so that's what you need the information, okay? And we've got the information. We've had the information since March of 2020. You know, I wrote the bill March of 2021. You know, 3 months after the jab came out, I realized this thing is horrible. You know, I knew it beforehand, but I didn't realize how horrible until afterwards. And as soon as I realized it was horrible, I wrote a bill to prevent it. Did anybody else write a bill to prevent it? No. We did, because we're always years ahead of everybody else. But that's the nature of Action Radio, of being proactive as opposed to reactive. I don't report news that everybody knows. There's no point. I talk, you know, this is what we talk about in my last little thing, talking about we don't report what has happened. We report what can happen. This show is about the future. I mean, the past, yes, I learned from the past. You know, it was that the baboon in The Lion King. Don't worry about it. It's in the past. It doesn't matter. Well, it still hurts. Yes, but it's in the past. You know, that's exactly the way I feel. So I'm getting a recording. Let's see if I can work on my baboon accent from Lion King. But it's in the past. It doesn't matter. What matters is what you do today, what you do now. And if you have not shared our shows, if you have not read just two bills, if you just read two bills, one on vaccine product liability and the other on ending big tech censorship, just those two bills. And they're everywhere. They're all over my websites. They're all over writeyourlaws.com. Go to writeyourlaws.com, click legislation on the menu bar, scroll down three, click all proposed laws, and there the best bills are right there. Everything from our Australian Bill of Individual Rights, Pianki's bill on splitting the ballots, a bill to not withhold any money from your paycheck until you've earned your standard deduction amount. All these things are there. Jury instructions of how to put the judge in their place. All that kind of stuff. It's all there. And that's just all proposed laws. Then you got citizen bill ideas. That's our workshop. That's our committee hearing. That's where we're working on a bunch of bills. And so it's all there. You know, I mean, we're at the, you know, we've led you to the water, but you're the horse that's not drinking. You know, this is where I'm running into a brick wall, and I don't know what to do. If anybody has an idea, let's go back to live chat, see if anybody's typing all kinds of massive things to me. Let's ask Marco in the Netherlands. You know, got an idea? Let's ask Pianki. How do we get people from being so enamored that they're the first to share information that we all know to actually taking some action? That's the challenge I have right now. I don't know how to answer it. Do, 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 do. Anyway.
Well, you always got people telling other people what they need to do. But they're not doing it themselves, and there's no proof that if they did do it, it would derive the results that they say it would. It's like saying blacks need to know their history and they would be better people. Well, where's the historical account for that?
Yeah. Better people for what? I mean, what makes a person a better person?
Mm-hmm.
You know, better, but you know, all right, let me put it this way. I do not know if Action Radio can do what it promises, that if we write the bills and we get enough people behind them, that we can actually, you know, influence Congress enough to have them vote against something that's not in their interest. In other words, you know, put liability on Big Pharma. When Big Pharma gives them so much money to run on to maintain their positions of corruption and decadence. I can't say that because no one's ever done this before. I cannot predict the future. All I can do is hope to change it. And the way I hope to change it is to provide a forum and a bill writing service where the legislation that would set us free from Big Pharma is already out there. And it's been out there for 2 years, Friday. and yet an articleist. You look at all the people who've been on the show. Jeff Childers, attorney, who just went to an Atlanta legal conference on COVID. Well, what better place to introduce vaccine product liability legislation and big tech free information legislation? And yet, I wasn't invited. But the person who knows about it was a keynote speaker. And I'm not saying he should have lobbied to get me there. I'm just saying it would have been nice to be there. But look who knows about what we do. Peter McCullough knows our bills. Dr. Robert Malone knows our bills. Christina Bobb, Trump attorney, knows our bills. David Stockman, economics head of Reagan, the Reagan budget, knows our bills. Peter Navarro, senior Trump analyst, knows our bills. Emma Robinson, who had me on vaccine product liability last August. Lindell TV, Frank Speech, she knows about our bills. All these people know about them, but it never gets beyond the talking stage. I've been on probably 20 interviews with different talk show hosts in the last 6 months. All of them talked about the bills. All of them supported the bills. All of them said they would probably want to write a bill. None of them have gotten back to me. Not one. So nothing changes. I can't change the world myself, and I shouldn't. No one person should ever change the world. But when so many people favor what we're doing and still can't make that leap to actually, you know, reporting it in the news, like if Peter McCullough was on with Joe Rogan again, and they were talking for a while, back and forth, da-da-da, the jab is terrible, now it's got HIV in it, yada-yada-yada. By the way, there is a solution to this problem. It's called vaccine product liability. There is a bill that here it is. I mean, how hard is that to say? And yet it's not being said. Apparently it's impossible to say because no one's saying it. Anyway, I got a bunch of more folks I'm going to talk to. I'm going to try and reach James O'Keefe, formerly of Project Veritas. And I have other folks in the works. I'm not going to say yet, but we have more guests coming. And maybe you know, who is going to be the guest that actually takes this nationally? Mike Huckabee? Newt Gingrich? I don't know. Candace Owens? I mean, the people are out there that can do it, but they're not doing it. I don't get it. I just don't. There's something very, very wrong that people are more interested and fascinated by repeating the problems and less interested in actually having the solutions. That's the part I don't understand. Huh.
Yeah, and that goes on. I find that all the time. People constantly talk about the same thing over and over.
Mm-hmm. So why is that? I mean, I try to have a fresh show every day. Yes, I talk about some things. There are certain themes in this show. But for the most part, our shows are different, radically different. Every show has a different set of reporters. You know, we have multiple bills, and yet nothing happens. It's just, I don't know. I didn't anticipate this part of Action Radio when I set the whole thing up. So we'll see. Let me.
You listen to the news. They run the same old white supremacy, racism, blah blah blah.
So this is a great topic because there was a clip on the news, One American News, where they played a black city councilwoman complaining about white supremacy for a white city council, or the city council or county commission, anyways, up in Minnesota. She says, as a black woman, I'm offended by your white supremacy. To which she should have said, well, you could never understand it because you're not white. I mean, why didn't she say that? I said, it's insulting. It's offensive for a black person or a Hispanic person or an Asian person or any person who's not white to complain about white supremacy because that makes you a racist. You have no idea what it's like to be white and realize that there is no privilege. If there was privilege, we wouldn't have affirmative action. If there was privilege, we wouldn't have a different differential SAT test scores. That's the things you bring up all the time. If there were privilege, then I would get scholarships. I would get grants in funding. And, Action Radio, I'd have a ton of white person, grants from the government. White male grants, but they're
right. They always complain. They always complain about white supremacy in it, but they always wanted to be like whites.
How do you be white? Tell me how to be white. Now there's interesting thoughts.
Wait a minute.
Here I am. I'm asking a black guy how to be white. I want people to notice that.
They say that blacks have X number of dollars in wealth, where whites have X number of dollars in wealth. You need to close the gap in education outcome between blacks and whites. You need to close the gap between economic outcomes between blacks and whites. So blacks complain about white supremacy,
mm-hmm.
but they want to be white.
Why would a black person want to
be white?
Like how do you be white?
Well, that's what the norm is, that we always hear the complaints.
Okay.
You know,
well,
white kids, black
right.
kids are lagging behind whites. Well, do something about it. Like you say, you complain about it, but do something about it.
Yeah. Do you think that white parents educate their white kids on how to be white?
I think white parents do what parents should be doing. You got mm-hmm. black parents that do what black parents should be doing. And you got
yeah.
those who don't.
I think most parents are just trying to raise their kids. But if you listen to the black offenders of, you know, who are offended by the fact that the USA exists, like this woman, and I'll see if I can find a source for you. But it's like, you know, when black folks say that you don't know what it's like to be black, you can't talk about it. Okay, fine. Well, then you don't know what it's like to be white, and you can't talk about it. It's the same thing.
Then they talk about how blacks are punished more severely with similar crimes that whites do. Well, why do you do the crime anyway?
Yes, but it is actually true that that black felons do get longer prison sentences. However, black felons generally have more crimes, you know, that they've committed than white felons, violent crimes. So in that respect, you're actually punishing people because they're repeat offenders. So there is a basis for that claim, mm-hmm. but you have to explain it. It's more than what you think it is. It's not because they're black. It's because these people have generally far more offenses to the name. And the more offenses you have, generally the longer your prison term, because you obviously didn't learn the first time. Right?
They say that blacks are more likely to be stopped in Ferguson than whites. Well, hell, there ain't no whites in Ferguson.
That's hysterical. That's actually really funny. That's yeah, exactly. Yes, you're more likely to be stopped if you're black in Ghana, for example, than if you're white. And there's what, 20 white people in Ghana? I mean, I don't know. I'm just made up a country
yeah.
because they were in the news. Okay, so yeah. So I'm more so am I as a white person more likely to be stopped in Ghana if I'm speeding? Well, I certainly stand out more. I'd be like one of five white people in the country, right? That would be hysterical. So that's black supremacy exercised
it's
on my whiteness.
Supremacy. It's black
yeah,
supremacy
okay.
in Ferguson. Yes, you're right.
There is black supremacy. Yeah, well, if the majority of black population is acting in a way that is preferential towards the black majority, then that is the definition of black supremacy. I'm still getting back on how to be white. Remember the history of white people with Martin Mull? I told you about that. I looked it up one day, and I was listening to it, and then I realized I looked on the right side of all the related videos, and every other video was on how evil it is for blacks in this country. So here I'm looking at – look it up yourself. Look at the history of white people, Martin Mull, and then see what else comes up on the related videos on the other side. There isn't a single other history of white people, including White People Part 2 by Martin Mull. They don't want you watching it, but that's hysterical. So how does one be white? And that's the, you know, but white people don't, like you said, don't stand up. She didn't stand up for herself. She's trying to defend. I'm not a white supremacist. The last thing you say when someone says you're a white supremacist is I'm not a white supremacist, because that's a weak position. What you say is, how dare you say that? Who are you to say that? You're not white. You have no idea what it's like. You know, and it said, how can you have privilege in a country that has affirmative action? That's the first thing. And we can just go down the list. Anyway, well, I want to talk about this bill that we had yesterday. That Jonathan, when he was talking about, remember we were talking about juries yesterday, and I said we have a bill that that gives mandatory jury instructions, because juries, there's two places that laws can be found unconstitutional. The first is by the state courts, you know, for federal law, and the second is through juries, and yet the jury gets completely short shrift. You never hear about the power of a jury to nullify laws, but juries are perfectly capable of saying this law is unconstitutional. Why not? Is there anything in the Constitution that says the only people who can say things are unconstitutional is the Supreme Court? Obviously, that's a rhetorical question. Bianchi?
Well, you know, and that's a good place to do it, too, because at that point in time, a jury is about to apply the law to a citizen. If the law is wrong, then you're going to unjustly punish a citizen.
But isn't that the whole spirit of common law? Common law arrives through precedent, through testing laws in actual cases. That's the whole basis of common law. So if that is the bit, in fact, juries used to do that. Juries used to be empowered to do that. I need to look up, I'm going to talk to Jonathan about this too, about the Supreme Court before John Marshall, before he invented the power of judicial review. So let me read this bill. Tell me what you think of this. I'm kind of curious. This is one of those, let's take action. So I wrote this November 11th of 2017. This is one of our early bills. This goes way back to WEBY days. And the title of the bill, all juries before deliberating will receive a Miranda-type mandated instruction from all judges. And here's my introduction. It says there are two ways that the judiciary have imposed their own tyranny on this nation. One is to usurp the unconstitutional power of judicial review, which is judges and justices, I'll take out justices because we know that's not true anymore, which is judges taking it upon themselves to rule on the constitutionality of laws, a power that is specifically not delegated to the judiciary in Article 3 of the Constitution. The other is by denying the instruction to juries that they have the power to judge not just the facts of the case and rule as the judge explains the law to them, but to rule, judge, and if necessary, nullify the laws in the case. The defendant can then be judged not guilty because the law or laws they are charged under never should have existed. It is called jury nullification. So it says, I propose that a Miranda-type instruction be mandated for every jury that sits, that before deliberation, they be given this instruction, just like people are given a Miranda warning at the time of arrest. It is an explanation of their rights, which they certify that they understand. So here's the proposed law. Juries, before deliberating, will receive this mandated instruction from judges. You have the right to judge the laws as well as the facts of the case. And if you find the laws unjust or unconstitutional, you have the power, right, and duty to nullify the law or laws and can acquit or find not guilty on that basis alone. That's it. That's the whole instruction. Two lines. Pianchi?
Yeah, I got to get a copy of this because I'm going to have a meeting with a state rep.
Oh.
I'm going to hand over something to him.
I'll put it in your Facebook Messenger. I'll do it right now. Easy peasy. Just ask.
I would just like to that there should come a time now where states demand their land back from the federal government. In case in point, this drilling operation is getting ready to happen up in that they're going to a license to happen in Alaska, the federal government is going to reach them like $11 to $15 billion. Now, wouldn't it be nice if the state themselves had that money?
Yeah, we should write
the federal
that bill.
Government has, the federal government has already proved, Greg, no matter how much money they have, they still going to come up in shortfalls. No matter how much
spend
they
more
have.
Than that. They'll always spend more money than they have. Yeah. So I put the bill in your messenger, but I also have it on my Facebook page, the legal page.
States can't typically do this. States have to run a balanced budget. Why?
Right.
Because you can't print money.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you remember, if you remember earlier in the show, I talked about this. I posted this on Facebook last night, that if you correct the stock market for inflation, you know, the $32,438 or whatever it was at the close yesterday, if you correct it for inflation back to 1900, it's like $904. So the Dow Jones Industrial Average corrected for inflation has gone from $41 at the opening in 1896 to $904 in 2023. Well, that's 130-some-odd years. That's about, 23... So it's like 127 years of Dow Jones Industrial Average, and it's only gone up from $41 to $900. Well, that's still a jump, but what's that per year? 2%? What's inflation? 3%? You know, so we got a problem. So inflation traditionally has been about 3%. That's a little bit lower now. I'm going to get a calculator out here. So let's go percentage. So 904 was 908 divided by 32,400 and whatever. I'm just making stuff up. Yep, 0.278. That's exactly that's equal to the value of the dollar. So actually, the market changed at all. So when I get the percentage, maybe this isn't quite right. No, it's But that's I just basically calculated the inflation number. And that's why it's the same. So the dollar today is worth basically 3 cents of a $1,900. That's how much it buys. So in 1900, you could buy it for 3 cents what it costs a dollar to buy today. That's how much inflation is. So I got to figure out how to calculate how the how much the market's jumped. If the market's gone from $50 to $900, how much jump is that? It's 900 divided by 50. Do, 900 divided by 50. So it's approximately 18 times. So the market's increased by a factor of 18. But how much has inflation gone in that time? So what I'm saying is the market really hasn't done much to outpace inflation. It's kind of scary. Bianchi? I am still on the air, I hope. Let me see what's going on here. Yeah, microphone's on. Bianchi must have had a... Does the market open now? I guess
The market has up. Yeah, you would have been better to put your money in the market in many cases than someplace else.
Oh, yeah. But I'm saying is the market hasn't jumped as much as we all think it. I'm going to ask Derek about this. If the market corrected for inflation has gone from $41 to $908, and inflation has gone from – so the jump in inflation is – I wonder if that's greater than the jump in the market. So the market's increased 18 times. But the rate of inflation, is now down to 3 cents on the dollar. So that to me is like 97% drop in value.
Before Obama, the market, Dow Jones was about 8,000. Now it's up to about 31.
Yeah, but so is the national debt. The national debt during Obama was what, 20 trillion? Now it's like 32. Inflation was far less. Well, I got some shows in the works on that. Let's talk about this whole idea of juries, getting instructions, or juries giving the judge instructions. So I had an alternate proposal too, a slightly longer version. I said an alternate is to consider a longer and more comprehensive version requiring proof of compliance. This could also be included in a state or federal jury bill of rights. And here's the extended version. You have the right to judge the laws as well as the facts of the case. And if you find the laws unjust, unfair, unworkable, prejudiced, unconstitutional, oppressive, exceeding of legitimate government power, or on another basis you declare, you have the right, power, and duty to nullify the law or laws in the case and acquit or find not guilty on that basis, on the basis that the law or laws themselves never should have existed. You have the right to access the Constitution, relevant jury nullification cases, and any relevant case law you request around the laws in question, regardless of whether or not they have been introduced in the proceedings. So there's the more detailed version for juries.
That would work good in gun cases, especially if the jury say, well, let me see that the Second Amendment. Let me read that.
Mm-hmm. How about January 6th cases? What does it say? How about the rights of the accused? Did they get the due process? Did they, get their grand jury? Did they get their hearing? Were they able to introduce all the evidence? Do they have the right to confront the witnesses against them? Well, yeah, they do. So this would be a great case for juries for the D.C. juries. Then I got further provisions. Listen, it gets better. I love this bill. It's one of my favorites. I should probably talk about it more often. No member of the judiciary, law enforcement officer, or government official shall withhold this instruction nor offer any instructions, coercion, or threat of prosecution, consequence, or repercussion to the contrary of these juror rights. No investigation – because what happens is the judges say, you have the – I will instruct you. I will tell you what the law says. Well, why should they – why aren't judges telling juries what the law says? It's not up to them.
That's right. They shouldn't be doing them.
Yeah.
That's another thing that – see, judges do so much that's totally inappropriate and beyond their scope. They themselves are like a little dictator.
Yeah.
In some cases.
It's like if you ever watch a presidential debate and they take questions from the audience. So somebody will ask a really good question, and then one of the moderating liberal reporters will take it and rephrase it and ask the question they wanted to ask. So they totally change the meaning. That's what the judges are doing. They'll take the evidence and facts in the case, and then they'll tell the jury, what they saw, and tell them how to rule. Basically, they instruct them. Why are judges giving instructions at all? Why don't they just say to the jury, you have the case, please deliberate, and just go? That's what they should be doing. They shouldn't give any, because anything the judge says is going to be biased and prejudicial. If I was a defense attorney, I would say, I'm sorry, judge, you can't give instructions to this jury. Wouldn't that be interesting? If a defense attorney says, okay, Your Honor, if you give instructions to the jury, you're going to prejudice my case. You're not allowed to give instructions. Oh, wouldn't that be fun? But they don't do that because they're not brave enough, because they've been co-opted by the system. Let me give you another condition, further provisions. No investigation, questioning, nor jury form or oath shall investigate in any way the feelings and thoughts of any prospective juror as to jury nullification, under pain of immediate disbarment for any judge, attorney, or other judicial official or officer. See, they try and weed out the people. I've been thrown off juries twice for talking about it. Of course, I openly said I'm for jury nullification. it's not like I didn't know it was going to happen. But they do. In fact, the judge in one case said that you cannot judge the laws in the case. You can only judge the facts. And I raised my hand and said, Your Honor, you're wrong. And why don't we call him Your Honor? He should call the jurors Your Justice or Your Eminence. I think call him Your Justice. So Your Justice Foreman, Your Justice, you know, something like that. Because that's what they're trying to do, achieve justice. But I got thrown off a case.
Well,
I
when
said, Your
they
Honor,
introduce,
you
know, they introduce as Your Honorable this, Your Honorable that.
So how about the jury being introduced as the Honorable Jury Foreman? Or foreperson?
Good idea.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've got to raise juries up so that they're more powerful than judges. And this is what I told Jonathan yesterday. I said, wait a minute. The juries represent the people. And if we're a government of we the people, then the juries are more powerful than the judge in the case. The judge is the referee. That's it.
Well, that's just
makes,
like these ATF cases. If you jury was to practice that, a lot of these ATF rules that they're using to punish people and convict people would have to go out the window.
So you tell a bunch of ignorant, you're absolutely right. So you tell a bunch of ignorant jurors that the ATF has the power to make regulations. These regulations are legal, and you have to judge whether the person, you know, violated the regulations. Whereas a really good defense attorney should be able to get up and say, these regulations are unconstitutional, that infringement on Second Amendment rights, agencies cannot make up regulations and have them have the force of law. The laws have to come from Congress, and the regulations come from the laws that Congress passes. None of this is legal. You need to nullify this case because it should never have even got to trial, because the ATF is using illegal authority that they don't have, and you can't convict on something that's not legal. You can't convict on an authority that doesn't exist. That's how I'd argue the case. Yeah, I should have been a lawyer, but I couldn't afford the student loans. Here's another one. All jurors are required to be actual peers of the defendant, known to and known by the accused, per the Constitution. So when we say a juror of your peers, they actually have to be your peers. They have to be people that know you. That'd be a nice addition too, because now they have a jury pool. They're not peers. You know, that jury, if I'm convicted of a crime, do you think I'm going to see my peers? Do you think I see Action Radio people? Of course, that might be a little too close. But do you think I'm going to have people that know me, have known me for years? Do you think they're going to be on the jury? They should be.
No, they're not. Like, some people, okay. Hey, don't forget to make comment on the shooting now.
Oh, go ahead. Oh, yeah, that's right. You brought that up earlier. Why don't you tell me about that? We've got time. I pretty much covered this. There's more to the bill, but people can read it. Read it on my page. Read it on writeyourlaws.com. Go to legislation. Go to all proposed laws. And the title is All Juries Before Deliberating Will Receive a Miranda-type Mandated Instruction from All Judges. Tell me about the shooting. What happened?
There was a school shooting yesterday in a private Catholic, a private Christian school, where apparently a former student who's trans went back and, you know, killed some people, killed maybe a little more. But the thing is this, is how it's being reported. Why come there's not an outcry for a anti-Christian hate bill? Because apparently that's what it was. You know how those that have these woke ideologies and these trans ideology, how they complain about how Christians use the Bible against them and so on and so on. So was this a case like that?
Well, it sounds like a hate crime. I mean, it's basically a hate crime against Christians, against people who believe in God. So let's talk about this trans person. So this trans person, which doesn't exist because there's no such thing as trans, you cannot change your sex. You can only have surgery and take drugs. So let's establish that first of all. So now we've got someone that has an ideology where they think that they have, here's another thing too, nobody gets special rights in this country. People do have them, but legally there's no authorization for one person to have greater rights than somebody else. So there are no LGBTQ special rights. They don't exist because that's unconstitutional. So coming from that basis, so you cannot have LGBTQ civil rights. You can only have civil rights. Okay. Everybody has the same civil rights. You cannot be discriminated against, but since trans is not a real thing, can't wait for the mail on that. But it's not. Trans is a made up category. It doesn't exist because nobody can actually transition from one gender to another. It can't be done. You cannot change your chromosomes and your DNA. All you can do is have surgery and take drugs. Mm-hmm. Now you might look different, be different, have different body parts. That's fine. Yes, that can happen, but doesn't make you, but you don't get a civil right for that because you chose to do that. You know, that doesn't make you special. It just makes you, you know, have issues. You know, so let's talk about this trans person. So the woke ideology says that if you don't believe what I believe, then I have the right to kill you because you're a subhuman. That's pretty much what it is, right?
Sounds like it to me.
Yes. Okay. So now we've got a trans person. Now I haven't read the story yet, but I'm just guessing. So fill in the details here. We've got a trans person that thinks because they're being persecuted, prosecuted. First of all, I have to think that trans really is a thing. And I've had a trans person on the show. Okay. Surgery, drugs. She's happy. I'm happy for her. She's an adult. Not a problem. Understand it completely. But she's not forcing it on other people. Okay. So that's okay. She's not using it to commit a crime. That's okay. She's a pretty decent person. I was really glad to have her on the air. It was a really great discussion. And if people want to do that, you have the freedom in this country to change your body parts, you know, to take drugs. And if you feel bad about yourself, that's great. But it's not a civil right. You don't get a preference in hiring. You don't get a preference in all kinds of stuff. You don't get special tax breaks. It's not a civil right. You can't claim prejudice because you're advocating something that doesn't exist. So there's no special rights. If you're if people who are discriminated against, that's a civil right for everybody. So, yes, in that case, a person who has changed their body parts and taken drugs, okay. If you think you're being discriminated against for taking that action, you've got a claim. You know, except unless you had a job that you wouldn't fit in, but that's another story too. We'll talk about that later. So this person believes they can kill people who disagree with them because they are morally superior. They'll use the force of arms. They think that they're somehow justified that murder of people who disagree with them or that don't agree with them completely is somehow justified. Is that about right?
Yeah.
So what's the report? What's the report say? In fact, I think you posted it to me here. Let me go check up the live chat a little bit here.
No, that's not the report. It's just coming out. She also wrote a manifesto.
Is
and
it
her
she?
Mother is for gun control. So one would wonder why come she didn't practice writ law and report her daughter to the authorities.
Okay. So let's get the correct terminology. So a transgender man is actually a woman. A transgender woman is actually a man. So we're talking about a man or a woman here. Do you remember? Let's see what the article says. Here's what you wrote.
She's biological female and she trans to a male.
Okay,
so
she's a woman. She's a woman that is attempting to add male body parts. Okay, that's fine. Did she take drugs?
I don't know.
Probably.
We don't know that much about it.
Okay, well, let's assume.
And she probably went to this school and it probably was a... The kids in the class probably was critical on her if she expressed it. I don't know. We just know from a few details.
Well, I mean, I got teased for being Australian. I didn't kill anybody over it. You know, because I know right from wrong. You know, and this whole woke ideology. But basically, as we talked about with Brianna earlier, these people feel morally superior. They think they can make up law. They think because they do it, it's okay. So obviously, this person knows that murder is illegal and did it anyway because they felt superior to the law and they felt superior to everybody else to the point where people who might have disagreed with them, teased them, said something they didn't like, deserve to die. Wow, that's sick. Here's what you said earlier.
Well, Brandon should be using words, should use words like woke supremacy.
I think, have we used that word on that show? I think we might have. If not, I'm going to start. It's a good term.
Woke supremacy and anti-Christian hate.
Mm-hmm. Sure. God hate. Let's call it God hate. You're a God hater. What's wrong with you? Anyway, so you said if the latest shooter was, in fact, a trans who went to a Christian school and killed, where's the left's call for anti-Christian hate bill? Well, the left hates Christians to begin with. See, Christianity, remember we were talking about this earlier with Brianna, the dynasties. The first thing every dynasty does, they destroy the family. You know, it's family, God, and self-defense. Those are the things they always go after. They always go after the family. They always go after God. And they always go after your means of self-defense. You know, disarm the people, get rid of religion, break up the family. That's just Marxism 101. So you wrote the trans who went to a Christian school and killed, did they kill their parents too? I mean, for sending them to a Christian school?
No, a parent is, I don't think she did. Now, she attended the school earlier in her life,
right.
I understand, too. Yeah. So I know the way I read it, wrote it, it sounded like she went to, physically drove to the
So she's
early.
A woman. All right, so now when she was in school, was she a woman, an unaltered woman, shall we say? Let's use that term. So was she unaltered?
I would say that she wasn't. I assume while she was in school as a student, she was revealing those tendencies, and being that it's a Christian school, she was being criticized for it. Now,
later on, she
wants to come back for whatever reason and take out some revenge.
She's sick. So, you know, she's criminally insane. To think you should kill people because they don't express your ideas? That's incredibly dangerous. Here's a question.
She wrote a manifesto. So therefore, in her house, if she was staying with her mother, the mother had to know something or seen the tendencies that this person was expressing and demonstrating. So that should have, she says that it said that the mother is pro-gun control.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if she's seen these tendencies in her daughter, well, pro-gun control people want to have laws like the red flag laws where you can tell on a family member. So why come she didn't do that?
Well, did the mother own guns? How old is we're talking about an adult kid here, or we're talking about still a child under 18?
She's an adult.
She's an adult.
A woman that done shooting was in her 20s.
Okay, so we're talking about an adult. So she was legally able to buy guns. So it doesn't matter what the mother thought at that point. Mother's not responsible. Once you reach the age where you can buy guns, whether it's 18 or 21, it should be 18. Then,
she had a handgun and maybe two other weapons.
So did she buy them legally?
She had two assault type. I think she had two assault type rifles, and she had a handgun.
You mean freedom rifles? We don't call them assault rifles.
Yeah.
We should call them by their proper name. Are they AR-15s?
Well, the way she used them.
Well, see, but that's the thing. So a firearm becomes an assault weapon if you use it to assault people. But I call them freedom rifles because I use them
to
defend my freedom.
What the news reported.
Yeah.
Okay. I was reading what the news report.
Yeah, but we got to correct the news because the news uses biased terminology. So we need to correct that with correct terminology. Oh, Marco's done. He's... So the Netherlands is leaving us. So we lost our European connection. We'll have to pick it up the next day. But I'd be curious about the gun laws.
The question here, Greg, is the response from the president, other than the lame brain response that we got from your White House press secretary talking about the Republicans don't go along with gun control, and also the response from the president as far as the need for legislation describing anti-Christian hate groups, which would be the woke crowd.
Mm-hmm. Well, and then how come, so what we need is the equivalent on the conservative side of the Southern Poverty Law Center, although a little more honorable than they are, that actually describes leftist hate groups. So it sounds like this person.
And also, just like you had the shooter in Chicago that holiday where they want to prosecute the father. Well, why come this mother who is pro-gun control, why come she's not being prosecuted because of what her daughter
said? Well, we don't prosecute people for their views, but she's not being prosecuted because her daughter's old enough to buy her own guns. So she has nothing to do with that.
Well, the kid in, I think the kid in, well, I don't know. Well, it depends on how long she's had the guns, the particular guns she used.
Well, okay, so let's do two case scenarios. So one case scenario, she bought them legally, had not committed a crime to this point, was not on the list of people that can't purchase guns, and then used them in a crime. Now she's on the list. Okay.
But how much did she know about the tendencies that her daughter had? So if she knew, would she be responsible to report it?
No. Well, let me put this way.
Red flag laws is about, right?
Well, red flag laws are unconstitutional. They're illegal. You cannot convict somebody of a crime that they might commit, maybe. See, a red flag is a conviction. It's anti-due process. See, here's the thing. It's a little challenging for people to understand that in a free society, what makes a society free is that the honest law-abiding people can do what they want. So the reason that red flag laws and preemptive strikes and things like that are unconstitutional is they stop all the honest people from exercising their rights. If you have red flag laws, then people will not exercise rights that they duly have simply because they don't want to be accused or lose their guns or things like that. So in a free society, you cannot convict somebody until they've committed a crime. You know, does that mean that some people will be shot, you know, in gun-free zones? Well, probably. So, but the problem is the gun-free zone. So in other words, the answer in a free society is to arm yourself to be responsible for your own self-defense simply because you can't arrest somebody for what they might do in the future, maybe, like a lot of other countries. That's what guarantees the freedom, not of the person to commit the crime, but the honest people to exercise their rights. And that's far more important.
Yeah, but here goes the hypocrisy. If you got someone who's pro-gun control and you got a member of your family that's loading up, going to kill somebody, you have an obligation to warn the authorities.
You know, that's an interesting question. Yeah, I think it would be a good idea. I don't think it should be a legal requirement. And the problem is if for everybody that warns of someone that has guns that might do something, what about a parent that doesn't want their kids owning guns simply because they don't want the kids owning guns? And they might be perfectly law-abiding, and they warn
the
authorities.
That's not the case here.
I'm just trying to think.
Went to the school with three weapons, mm-hmm. and she had to come out. She was still staying with her mother. She had enough time to write a manifesto in the house.
Mm-hmm.
So she had to be expressing those type of tendencies, that type of animosity, mm-hmm. where the mother should have picked up on, if that is the case.
Okay, so what do you do if you have a problem kid? She could have told the school. She could have read the manifesto. She could have asked the advice of lawyers. She probably could have told law enforcement. See, I'm not sure. This is a gray area for me. I don't have
a complete
answer. How can
she be for gun control when she got a gun misuse going on right under her nose and not report that?
Well, a lot of people who are against guns that own them, they're just against guns for everybody else. There's a lot of liberals. There was a famous case. I think I could get this wrong, but if I remember, Grace Slick of the Jefferson Airplane used to talk about how anti-gun she was, and then she got a visit from the police for some reason or for whatever reason was, you know, and it came out that she had a bunch of guns in her house. And she said, well, those are my guns.
And if this mother was
– you know, I have to protect myself against the crazy people. You know, so the guns were okay for her, but they weren't okay for anybody else.
For gun control, mm-hmm. If this mother was for gun control to prevent mm-hmm. what her daughter eventually done, mm-hmm. well, she should have reported her daughter like she wants to see red flag laws used in order to control guns and people with
them. Yeah, but hypocrisy is not a crime. Hypocrisy is not a crime. You can't convict people for what they should have done. You know, because then we can have all kinds of requirements. Well, you should have exercised more, so we're not going to pay for your heart surgery. You know, you should have taken better care of yourself. You should have lost more weight. We're not going to give you, a life extending. We're not going to, you know, treat you for X. You know, so I mean, where does this go? So I always try to look at this from the law-abiding citizen. You know, how are they going to be affected? Are people going to have their rights affected? So most of the things that people propose in terms of, well, you have to tell the authorities, you have to prevent this. You know, prevention is really tough. The best prevention is for people to be armed, to watch out for themselves, to have security, do all that kind of stuff. Take preemptive measures. Did this woman have a, you know, in other words, did she have a duty to warn? Do you want to make it a legal requirement to warn? And then how do you judge whether the warning is correct?
Paul Revere warned, didn't he?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but that's a different situation. But, you know, how far do you want to take warning? Do you want to make it a legal requirement?
You got people coming with weapons to kill you. So
exactly.
He warned.
Oh, no, I'm assuming Paul Revere did the thing. I'm not questioning Paul Revere. I'm questioning, do you make warnings a legal requirement, or do you just make it a moral imperative? In other words, you should do this. You should warn if you believe your kid is about to commit a murder. I think you should.
Yeah, well, what I'm saying is this. If this lady is so concerned about the control of guns, whereas this incident, if it did happen this way, and I'm putting a lot of presumptions in there, well, she should have either tried to stop her daughter or warn the authorities of what her daughter seemingly is starting to act kind of strange.
Yeah, but her position on guns is irrelevant. We've got to go in a second, but her position on guns is irrelevant to me, because if she was absolutely pro-gun, had guns all over the house, had them locked up, you know, secured all over the house, you know, whatever, that position wouldn't matter either. She would have no more liability, no less liability or responsibility for telling authorities what her daughter might do.
She has a moral liability. Yeah, she has a moral liability to do what she has to do to protect the lives of other innocent people.
Yeah, but does she have a – last question, does she have a legal requirement to do that?
Well, people can take those things to another level. You never know.
Yeah. Okay, sounds good. Good chat today. So let me get going here. I'm back tomorrow morning, 7 a.m. Central Time, and we've got – this is a great show. We have Brianna. Thanks, Bianchi. So, of course, Bianchi, who's on – a whole bunch of time, which is really great. We had Josie's report. We had Brianna's report. This has been a fascinating morning. Tuesdays, you know, I love Mondays. I love all the days, but Mondays, Tuesdays are particularly good simply because we have such great reporters. We have Jonathan and Diane, Jonathan and Dorothy on Monday. We have Brianna and Josie on Tuesday, and usually Bianchi both days as well. So Mondays and Tuesdays are pretty cool around here. Wednesdays and Thursdays, still working on Fridays, pretty good though. Twin Candace is here when she does her new report, you know, Believe the Journey. With Cowgirl Candace. So she's one of our newest reporters. And Derek Park on Friday also. So I need a gun reporter for Friday. So I got an open hour at 8 o'clock or 7 a.m. for half an hour. So I got a couple of places open. I like gun reports on Friday, but I could do a Thursday gun report too. So, you know, all these options are available. So anyway, our website here that you're listening to is blogtalkradio.com/citizenaction. Our legislative site for all the bills we talked about is writeyourlaws.com, WriteYourLaws. You'll find most of the good bills. If you click on legislation on the menu bar, scroll down three, click on all proposed laws, you'll find the good bills. Those are the ones we're sending out. GiveSendGo.com/actionradio if you want to contribute. My Substack, GregPenglis.substack.com for all my latest articles. And Facebook for my latest video of Brandon giving a speech, what I'm calling the Democrat response to Trump. With the Soviet National Anthem background. It's pretty funny. So that's what I've been up to. All right, take care, everybody. Have a wonderful day, and I will see you tomorrow, 7 a.m. Central Time. Greg Penglis here for my book, The Complete Guide to Flight Instruction. Everyone at some point in their life wants to learn how to fly. Few try. Even fewer go on to get a license. I believe a major reason for that is how we teach people how to fly. My book is designed to help you navigate the flight training system, but it's so much more than that. It really describes an entirely new way to teach flying. So if you've never tried a lesson or got discouraged in your training and quit for any reason, this book can help you. Don't be a rote pilot who just follows procedures. Be a thinking pilot who makes great decisions, who understands all the reasons why we do what we do. You can incorporate these principles into your own flight training at any time. The Complete Guide to Flight Instruction is featured on the Action Radio with Greg Penglis Facebook page and is available from Amazon.com. Well, that sounds good. Even better. Okay, how about your car? If you want the best service for your vehicle, please talk to James at Florida Stores Automotive. Conveniently located at 6715 Caroline Street, in the historic district of Milton, Florida, right between the Milton Bakery and the Blackwater Trail. Whether you need an oil change or an entire engine replaced, this is the place. The phone number is 850-623-6651. That's 850-623-6651. Call, ask questions, and get the information you need. Florida Stores Automotive is a full-service automotive shop for both domestic and imports, modern and classic. It is a family-owned business here in our Milton community. Open weekdays from 7:30 to 5 p.m., Florida Stores Automotive is a convenient place to keep your car maintained and on the road. Ask them about Firestone tires and the rotation and maintenance plan. Florida Stores Automotive. I go there. You should too. Do you know your way around healthcare, insurance, pharmacies, surgery, alternative treatments and choices? I don't. Which is why I'm so glad I met Priscilla Romans, had her on Action Radio, and learned about health patient advocacy. She is the founder of Great Care. And now as an affiliate of Great Care, we are proud to offer through our discount code, WYL, which stands for Write Your Laws, a 10% discount. Great Care saves you both time and money. They provide medical advocacy, consultation, advice, and recommendations nationwide. Their website is greatcare.com. That's G-R-A-I-T-H-care.com. You can email them at greatcare.adm@gmail.com or call them at 469-864-7149. That's 469-864-7149. Great Care, better health through better knowledge and advocacy. From addiction to achievement, that is the story of Mike Lindell. It started with MyPillow and now goes to MyCoffee. Action Radio is proud to be an affiliate of MyPillow. Our discount code is the same for all our product affiliates, WYL, which stands for Write Your Laws. MyPillow pillows are guaranteed the most comfortable pillow you'll ever own. Action Radio is guaranteed to be the most controversial show you will ever hear. Check out their products with our discount code at mypillow.com/WYL. That's mypillow.com/WYL. Or order now by calling 1-800-544-8939. That's 1-800-544-8939. Sleep well so you can wake up and hear Action Radio live. This is Greg Penglis. So what is Action Radio? It is a radio show with its own citizen legislature. That's you, the listener. It is a fully interactive system of listeners, expert guests, social media, writing bills, legislator input, bill submission, lobbying, and citizen action. Action Radio is the future of talk radio using all the available technology in one completely integrated new system. You are listening to Action Radio Online with Greg Penglis. The webpage for all Action Radio shows and podcasts is blogtalkradio.com/citizenaction. Please share our show with all your friends and family, both nationally and internationally. The guiding principle of Action Radio is this: we the people give our consent to be governed through writing the laws by which we are governed.